Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Conversation Radio, America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's the middle of the week. And, I suppose there are a lot of people feeling, what shall we call it, election hangover? Wisconsin didn't turn out too well, did it? Not to be a nattering nabob of negativity, but I kind of expected it. Especially when I started seeing stories coming from Brad Friedman about the fact that there was really no way to recount the votes. That's a bad sign. But I got to tell you this, Kapanke, the guy who lives in Brother Albert's district, Brother Albert helped get the job done. Kapanke was one of the two Republicans who got their sorry repig-licking asses recalled yesterday. Needed three, got two. So it looks like it's going to, the ugliness will continue. How do you explain that? I explain it by virtue of the fact that there's all kinds of filthy money in the process, and there's still a lot of stupid people, even in Wisconsin, who are more than happy to vote against their own best interests and continue to vote repig-licking for a variety of reasons. Little fetuses, or because they're teabaggers and have the approximate brain capacity of Pete Moss? Yeah. And those are sufficient when we're talking about repig-licking votes. I wish it had been otherwise. Yea, verily, I do. But it wasn't. But it is Wednesday. It is, in fact, the middle of the week. It is hump day. We are now officially downhill to Friday. But, as you know, it is so, so very much more than that. Brethren, sistren, it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Glory, glory, glory. That's right, it's prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. And the deacons have gotten finished with their second, third, and fourth helpings of the fresh berry cobbler down in the fellowship hall, and the hand-churned ice cream that the little royal ambassadors and girls in action teen groups churned so hard on through the day. And now, brethren and sistren, it's time to come up into the sanctuary. That's right, that's right, that's right. This is, of course, the time when we pass the plate on the Horn. I remind you that we fell considerably short of our fundraising goal yesterday evening. Our fundraising goal for this evening is $100, one single picture of Benjamin Franklin, that born-again Christian, Benjamin Franklin. We just need one of him. 10 of y'all, that would be 10 Alexander Hamiltons to the single Benjamin. 10 contributions of $10 each. Amen and amen. As the plate passes around during this time of prayer, And we have a special guest this evening for a prayer in song, brethren and sistren. And so as the prayer in song is sung and the plate passes round, brethren and sistren, I urge you to dig deep, hallelujah, glory, dig deep, so that there may be further prayer meeting Wednesdays right here on the Horn. Brother, sing it to us.
Heavenly Father, we thank you tonight for all your blessings. You said in all things give thanks. So we want to thank you tonight for these mighty machines that you've brought before us. Thank you for the Dodges and the Toyotas. Thank you for the Fords. And most of all, we thank you for Rush and Yates Margaret to give us the power that we see before us tonight. Thank you for Jim, for Ms. Technology, Laurel's Living Engines. Thank you for Snowball Racing Fuel and Goodyear Tires to bring performance and power.
Boogity, 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 amen, hallelujah, glory, glory, glory. This is the Cathedral of Common Sense, brethren and sistren. Come on in, deacons. Come on in from out in the parking lot. Quit standing there smoking with the strippers and the sinners. And come on in through the vestibule. Don't carry by that bowl of 35-year-old after-dinner mints. They're only there for decoration, just like the plastic carnations. Come on in, brethren and sistren. Come on down that blood-red aisle and fall upon your knees. Glory. Hallelujah. Fall upon your knees and put your hands upon the subwoofers and feel the healing rays of common sense flowing through you. From the server on high, this is the Cathedral of Common Sense, and brethren and sisters, I am Brother Bob Kincaid, Archpope, Ultimate Imam, Superior Rabbi, Ultimate Shaman, and all-around nice guy. Welcome to Prayer Meeting Wednesday. Where to begin, where to begin, where to begin? Well, brethren and sisters, I think I know where I want to begin. Among the godly presidential contenders of the Repig-Lickin' Party, brethren and sistren, there is none more godly than Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum. Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum, man on dog sex Santorum. Oh, he's out there working. He's a-working and a-polishing his message, brethren and sistren. He's a-polishing and a-polishing. Probably gets a little red in the face from all of that polishing. You know how that kind of thing goes. But he's having a little trouble with his metaphors. Because you know how it is when you're trying to lead people to the light. Sometimes they don't understand the more esoteric qualities of a message of holiness. And you have to do some storytelling. In the Bible, those are called parables. But you know what, brethren and sisters? Sometimes parables can be perilous. Sometimes they don't get your parables, brethren and sisters. And you got to go back to the drawing board. You know what I mean? Hallelujah. Amen and amen. The parable business can be perilous business. Well, just as an example.
Consider the lilies.
Don't you want to haggle?
No, in the field.
What's wrong with it then?
Nothing, take it.
Consider the lilies?
Well, the birds then.
What birds?
Any birds.
Why?
Well, have they got jobs?
Who? The bird.
Have the birds got jobs?
What's the matter with him?
Says the birds are scrounging.
Oh, look, the point is, the birds, they do all right, don't they?
Well, good luck to them.
Yeah, they're very pretty.
Okay, and you're much more important than they are, right? So what are you worrying about? They are, see?
I'm worrying about what you've got against birds.
I haven't got anything against the birds. Consider the lily.
He's having a go at the flowers now.
Give the flowers a chance.
I'll give you one for it.
It's yours.
Two. Oh. Look, there was this man, and he had two servants.
What were they called?
What?
What were their names?
I don't know. And he gave them some talents.
You don't know?
Well, it doesn't matter.
He doesn't know what they were called.
Oh, they were called Simon and Adrian. Now...
Oh, you said you didn't know.
It really doesn't matter. The point is, there were these two servants.
He's making it up as he goes along.
No, I'm not. And he gave them some... No, wait a minute. Were there three?
Oh,
there
he's three. Terrible.
No, there were three. There were
two or three. Oh.
Yeah, you see, I mean, the parabolizing game can be a trifle difficult. People, you know, they bring their own experiences, their own existential realities to the message itself, and sometimes it just gets a little difficult. Consider, as I said, that man of great holiness, Brother Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum. Brother Santorum is out there trying to explain marriage to people. Now, you'd think here in 2011 that marriage wouldn't take a whole lot of explaining. I mean, there's a lot of marrying going on just all over the place. I mean, we just got done with June a couple of months ago, and you can't swing a dead rat without hitting a wedding in June now, can you? But Brother Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum has gone out to Iowa in his quest to be our next president, and he feels the need to explain marriage to the Iowaans. Because them Iowaans, well, they got them a court that said it'd be all right if the homosexuals got married too. If they was able to love each other as they chose and commit to each other as they chose and partake of vast and multitudinous benefits conferred by the law of the United States of America and the Constitution that are guaranteed under the... Yeah... Constitution, due process, equal protection, all of that kind of stuff. And Brother Frothy Mixture, he don't like that. So he's trying to, he's working hard, brother and sister. He's trying to follow his Lord and Savior, Christ Jesus, in explaining what marriage means to those heathen Iowaans. Who's done had their state completed by the gays of getting hitched and picking out China patterns and having towels monogrammed and getting them funny little soaps that ain't nobody can use but just sits on the dish like all them good heterosexual couples has. It ain't been going easy for the Frothy Mixture, I gotta tell you.
A very important distinction that the left does not make. That you can be against what a group of people believe and not be against the people affected by those beliefs. And I can say that marriage is what marriage existed before governments existed. This is a net.
Well, I gotta stand with him on that one. Marriage did exist before governments existed. Before there were governments, a man would have a daughter, and another man would have a son, and the man with the daughter would trade his daughter to the man who had the son in exchange of the man with the son, giving the man who had the daughter an equal value of camels and goats and bats and rats and elephants and giraffes and snakes and pigs. Well, no pigs. Well, I don't know. Maybe there's pigs. Fish, who knows what. Sheep, poor sheep. in exchange for that their girl child that the man had. It was what's called a property transfer. The girl was property, the sheeps were property, the camels were property, the goats were property, the snakes and the rats and the bats and the elephants and the giraffes was all property. And he's just doing a property swap, so it absolutely existed before government. And some people got so good at it that they had them property transfers 400, 500, 600 times, maybe 1,000 even. And that ain't counting the concubines. So I got to give it to the frothy mixture on that. But I still say he's got some parable problems. Parable.
Existed before governments existed. This is a napkin.
It's a napkin.
I can call this napkin a paper towel. But it is a napkin.
What? Now, how about that? This is a napkin. I can call this napkin a paper towel, but it's still a napkin. But you know what? If I turn over my boiling hot coffee and I say, hey, Brother Frothy Mixture, hand me a paper towel and he hands me a napkin, I'm still going to go to sopping up my burning crotch with that paper napkin, whether it be a towel or a paper napkin, and it ain't going to matter much to me in the midst of trying to get the heat off of my genitalia that's a burning. So obviously, you see, Brother Frothy Mixture has some parable problems.
Because it is what it is. Right? You can call it whatever you want, but it doesn't take change the character of what it is. Sort of the metaphysical. Right? So people come out and say marriage is something else. Marriage is the marriage of five people. It can be 5, 10, 20. Marriage can be between fathers and daughters. Marriage can be between any two people, any four people, any 10 people. It can be any kind of relationship. And we can call it marriage. But it doesn't make it marriage. Why? Because there are certain qualities and certain things that attach to the definition of what marriage is. Is the bringing together according to the natural law people of two genders in nature who come together to form a union for the purpose.
I didn't think Brother Rick liked people forming unions. Maybe he's turning his ways.
Of the benefit of each of them because they are made in nature to fit together, to live together, one on one, as we see in nature with many species.
Not all species.
To do what? To have children? To raise those children?
Wait. You mean marriage is for the having of children? Brother Frothy Mixture, you might want to get a little telegram or a tweet or an email or a Facebook message or something off to your buddy Flush Flemball. That man's been a-marrying all over the place and hadn't had a youngin' yet. Then again, nobody's seen the latest Mrs. Limbaugh in several months now, except on the sides of milk cartons down in Florida. Texas Betsy noting, my ancestors were one guy plus two or three or four wives and a concubine or two. I guess that means two or three or four of the wives were paper towels and the concubine or two were napkins or something. You know what? Like I said, I don't think the parable's working for him. He's going to have to go back to the drawing board because this one's not playing in Peoria or Ames either, for that matter.
The building block of a stable and good society. That is special. That is a gift that God has given us, because nature and nature's God gave us this gift upon which to build a society. And I know people are saying, how does this guy get away with talking about God? He's got a report from the LA Times, and they're going to say, oh my God, this is a God. I believe in God. I don't think he is a God that's distant and just sort of remote.
No, he lives two blocks over.
reveals himself
in Cedar Rapids.
His creation. Marriage is part of his creation. It's part of the gift. And when we say, well, we're going to say marriage is something other than it is, and we are going to treat it as a good, as equivalent, you will have huge impact on that institution. You will devalue it, you will cheapen it, and you will make it less available because it will not be seen.
Does that mean he's going to have to give some of the oxen and the goats and the sheep and the camels back? It's been cheapened?
I think he's going to have... No,
Brother Frothy Mixture, this one's not working for you.
What is it? And therefore, people won't participate. We will see that happen. In addition, it will have impact beyond just marriage. It will have impact on religion. We have now created a right, a super right, to sexual freedom. It's not in the Constitution, but the courts...
Well, neither's the Super Congress, but we're going to have one of them too, Rick. I don't see anybody whipping out paper napkins or paper towels and... No. See, what I hate about this, what I loathe, detest, and despise about this, is that the miserable bastard can't... I mean, this is a guy who brought a dead fetus home and showed it to his children. This is your brother, but he's dead! Say hello to your brother who's dead! Let's all get down and roll around on the ground with our dead baby. I mean, that's pretty sick. God knows, most people who did something like that, they'd be accused of child abuse. Terrorizing little ones. But not this freak. No, this freak's all... No, he's all... And you'll notice that he can't describe marriage equity in the terms in which it actually exists. There's no law out there that says you can have a good old-fashioned traditional biblical marriage. You know, where you trade off sheep and camels and goats and bats and rats and elephants and giraffes and oxen and things like that in exchange for a female. No, that can't be done in America. You can't have a traditional biblical marriage in America. You can, however, have a marriage that is sanctioned within and under the strictures and dogma and doctrine of any one of a vast variety of veritable Pandora's box of religions. The Muslims say you can get divorced. The Catholics say you can't. You can get divorced under Judaism. The Baptists won't let you have a marriage in their church if you're marrying a second time because they frown upon divorce as well. I don't know where the Flying Spaghetti Monster stands on marriage and divorce, because after all, in Flying Spaghetti Monster, the dogma, when you die, you go to heaven, and heaven consists of a beer volcano and a stripper factory. I think that marriage doesn't play a very big role in a religion whose afterlife involves a beer volcano and a stripper factory. We'll be needing a print and press for $1 bills as well. No. Damn him. The Frothy Mixture has to describe marriage equity as being able to marry four or five or whatever, and fathers marrying their daughters. You know, they always go down that incest road a little too quick for my liking. Uncle Daddy! Ew. But like I said, this one's not working for him. So he apparently chucked the paper towel, paper napkin analogy. By the time he had shown up on Monday, no, that was on a Monday, it was this past Monday when he did the paper towel, paper napkin trick. I much prefer the trick done by competent magicians where they fashion a little cone out of newspaper and pour milk into the cone, and then the milk disappears. But no. So this past Monday, next last, he did the paper napkin, paper towel trick. And then on Friday, he shows up to an editorial board meeting with the Des Moines Register. And he's working that, he's still working that marriage angle. But like I said, when you're in the prophesying business and you're dealing with people's own existential realities and making up parables and things like that, that the simple can understand, you know, right-wing Iowaians, simple people. Yeah, you know what I mean by simple people, right?
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Right. And the paper towel, paper napkin thing was a bit above him, I guess. Or, I don't know, skewed to one side. So he knew that he was dealing with a bunch of pointy-headed intellectuals and, you know, probably abusers of various substances. You know how it is with those journalists. So he has a new analogy, a new parable, if you will, being as how he's a prophet now. The prophet Frothy Mixture has a new parable by the time he gets to the editorial board of the Des Moines Register. No, really. He's left the solids, and he's going to work with the liquids.
Marriage is what marriage is. Marriage existed before there was a government. It's like, you know, handing up this and saying, this glass of water is a glass of beer. Well, you can call it a glass of beer, but it's not a glass of beer. It's a glass of water. And water is what water is. Marriage is what marriage is.
You know, I think it's going to take some more work. Of course, you know how it is with underpaid journalists at newspapers. Newspapers are dying all over the country. They can't probably can't hardly afford beer. What? It's beer? Pass it up. Damn! Build this man a religion. He's turned water into beer. Oh, it's still water? Chee. But maybe, brothers and sisters, just maybe, the frothy mixture is right. Maybe marriage is marriage. Because, you know what? If you marry, if a dark-haired man marries a blonde-haired woman, but a blonde-haired man marries a dark-haired woman, that's still marriage. If a blue-eyed person marries a green-eyed person, it's still marriage. If a brown-eyed person marries another brown-eyed person, it's still marriage. Because if there is any existential requirement prerequisite to marriage, and we've moved into the... And I like my eye color analogy a lot better than his napkins and towels, beer and water thing myself. If there is an existential requirement to marriage by which we define marriage, and I find it interesting that the frothy mixture never mentions this one thing, maybe, just maybe, in the universe, in the grand scheme of things, if indeed there is, in fact, a grand scheme of things, maybe, just maybe, the one real, honest, actual, no kidding, for true prerequisite to marriage is more simple than anyone can imagine. Maybe the prerequisite to marriage is but one thing. Perhaps
What it takes to make a marriage is love. Now, I don't subscribe to the frothy mixtures religion. I don't subscribe to his twisted understanding or misapplication of universal truth. But his own holy book, by one of his own saints, has this to say. Though I speak with the tongues of men and angels and have not love, I am become as sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains and have not love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, and have not charity, not love, it profiteth me nothing. Love suffereth long and is kind. Love envieth not. Love vaunteth not itself. Is not puffed up. Doth not behave itself unseemly, seeketh not her own, is not easily provoked, thinketh no evil, rejoiceth not in iniquity, but rejoiceth in the truth, beareth all things, believeth all things, hopeth all things, endureth all things. Love never faileth. But whether there be prophecies, they shall fall away. Whether there be tongues, they shall cease. Whether there be knowledge, it shall vanish away. For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know even as also I am known. And now abideth faith, hope, and love, these three. But the greatest of these is love. And yet never, never, ever, in all of his prattling and prating about paper towels and napkins and water and beer and marriage, never does the frothy mixture consider the power, the transformative power, the earth-moving power, the life-saving power of love. For love he hath no word, for love he hath no time. And that should tell us, brothers and sisters, all we ever needed to know about Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum. And those whose sad, sorry, pathetic, hate-infested beings stand with him. For he has nothing. And his own book says so. If I have not love, I am as tinkling brass. Well, tinkle on, frothy mixture. Brother Frothy Mixture, what did our good friend Michael, otherwise known as Kid A in the chat room, just say? Yeah, Bro Fro Mix, or just BFM. No, I like Bro Fro Mix. Tinkle on, Bro Fro Mix. Tinkle on. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Cold, or if it was a fade out, and now we know it's a fade out. It's been a while since I played that. Of course, Robert Palmer, Addicted to Love. This is The Horn. It is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. I am Bob Kincaid. Many thanks. A dedicatory contribution just came in, and it is That it just says, this donation is in honor of the life so well lived out by Judy Bonds, an exceptional example of women standing. And what courage Judy did show during her all too brief time on the planet. Longer than many, but not as long as she was needed. Thank you very, very kindly. Thank you. You know, a day doesn't go by that I don't think of Judy. I miss her horribly. Hard to believe she's been gone 8 months. The first toaster of the evening really does. The first toaster of the evening goes out to Michael Kid A for Bro Fro Mix. Well, we gotta make that one stick somehow. Bro Fro Mix for Rick Frothy Mixture Santorum. Susan, News Ninja Susan, noting, I prefer Lennon's take on it regarding love. I assume Susan is referring to All You Need Is Love. But of course, Lennon, for good or ill, was raised in the church and would have heard 1 Corinthians 13, which basically says, all you need is love. Because 1 Corinthians 13, as I read it, says, if there's no love, there's nothing else. So really, it's all you need. David in Tennessee. Am I the only one that thinks Frothy Mixture is a dead ringer for the Michael Scott character from The Office? Both make about the same amount of sense when they haul off and speechify. I hadn't noticed that, but no. And, you know, I heard somewhere along the way that Marcus Bachman is a big fan of that song and that prayer that we played at the beginning of the program. Because he heard, early on when he first heard it, he thought it was boogity, 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 gay men. But it turns out it's boogity, 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 amen. But we can forgive Marcus Bachman for a little projecting, can't we? It is prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn, and we got to get this one out of the way. Will somebody please file a lawsuit? I mean, really. You know, this is one of those talk the talk and walk the walk moments. We've got, I mean, if you're not willing to do it yourself, support someone who is. Dear Jumpin' Jesus, you know all about the Ark Park, right? This really big exercise in utter mindlessness that's being built in Kentucky. Well, it turns out, it was announced in May, but it turns out it's going forward. And the Ark Park has been extended a 75% property tax discount over the next 30 years. In other words, there are going to be people who live near the Ark Park in single-family dwellings who will actually pay more in property taxes per year than the Ark Park. Hell, I'm surprised they're paying taxes at all. I mean, why not just declare yourself a... Oh, but wait, they want to make a profit. ...75% property tax discount. Oh, ACLU, wherefore art thou? Lexington Herald Leader reporting, the array of state and local incentives worry some people who aren't sure they will pay it off in the end. The tax deal is in addition to almost $200,000 given to the company by Grant County's economic development arm as an enticement to keep the project located there, along with 100 acres of reduced price land. And that's not counting the state's promise of $40 million worth of sales tax rebates and a possible $11 million in improvements to the interstate near the project that would be financed by the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet. Good God Almighty!
Do you suppose if somebody... Oh, these are the shortcomings of our side of this debate. Can somebody please draw up a Darwin Park plan and offer to site that 2 miles away? No, 100 miles away. I, by God, want interstate development for the Darwin Park. You know, they can hire people, you know the old costume with the horse and one person's the front and the other's the back? Well, we can have Darwin fish wandering all around on legs! We can sell t-shirts with that lovely portrait of Jesus holding the little baby Tyrannosaurus Rex as the pterodactyls fly around by the volcano in the background. I mean, this makes me crazy, but it's also funny and stupid. I mean, come on. No, you can't just make fun of it. You gotta create an alternative to it. Because the minute Kentucky says, no, thank you, we don't want to sponsor a Darwin Park, then the art park goes up in a puff of smoke. Democrat Governor Steve Beshear is, of course, a big fan of the Ark Park. It'll create up to 900 jobs, and it'll attract 106 million tourists in its first year. There's only one problem with what Governor Beshear thinks. He's not thinking, he's believing. That 900 jobs and 1.6 million tourists... That all comes from the feasibility study that was commissioned by Ark Encounters LLC, in which they merely told Kentucky state officials, the Commonwealth, the contents, because they never actually showed the study to Kentucky state government, Commonwealth government officials. Makes me want to just drive down to Frankfurt and offer to sell them a bridge in Brooklyn or something. Oh, we'll move it right here to Frankfurt, Governor, and there'll be 1.6 million tourists come to see it, and it'll create 900 jobs. Well, can I see the report? No, you can't see the report, Governor. This is embarrassing. I don't know. Reverbo still wants us to get our green jackets and go and visit make a group journalism visit to the Creation Museum. And by the way, Michael noting that when Bro Fromix gets all prophet-like with his pathetic parabolas, he gets promoted to Pro-Fro-Mix. Work it, Michael, work it. Pro-Fro-Mix. Sounds like something they use down to the track. Boogity, 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 amen. And yes, Pro-Fro-Mix also sounds like a pill to alleviate excessive anal froth. Whew. We are up and running tonight. So, with no further ado, lines are open. I got four lines open if you want to jump in. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. It is prayer meeting Wednesday, so get yourself up into a righteous, zealous, holy rolling froth and dial right in on your nickel. It's 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid at gmail.com. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, gosh. Hey, Bob. Am I your first caller tonight?
You are, Tracy. You are.
Oh, my God. Of course.
You don't win anything because we're poor.
Okay, well, you know, keep those contributions coming. We, you know, everybody's listening. We need money. Well, Bob needs money. I'm working, so. But, anywho, I was all excited thinking that, you know, we were going to, Wisconsin was going to pull through, but I didn't really read all of it because after I was so depressed that...
Yeah, after the first couple of paragraphs, you go, oh, screw it.
Yeah, so So the Republicans still maintain the control of the legislature right here, right?
Right, yeah. But there will still be a recall. I suspect they will still make Scott Walker.
There's another recall. They are going to recall Scott Walker. They're like counting the minutes until November. Yes.
That's my understanding. Yeah. Last time I talked to our buddy Bruce, he said, "Oh yeah, we're going to be ready the minute they say we can. It's going to get filed."
Good. Well, it's just weird, you know. I'm trying to not be ugly and upset about stuff. I've actually been doing some. I'm waiting for the book. What is it? Rainbow Pie.
Yes, Joe Bajan. Yeah.
Yeah, it was my idiot postman. Normally, I have a new postman, and he's an idiot because my old postman would just leave boxes in front of my door. This bastard, I'm going to go to the post office to pick up the damn box, and we both know how fun it is to go wait at the line at the United States Postal Service. Okay.
True enough.
I'm not going to be able to start reading that until this weekend. But what I have been reading is Race Matters by my new hero, Dr. Cornel West. Have you ever read that one?
No, I have. No, I have not.
Bob, when you get it, it's probably it'll take you maybe maybe a day, even a few hours. But it's basically. There's so much insight in that book, and the book was written like in 94, right? Not too long after the riots and the Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas hearings and all that. And it basically talks about, you know, the state of Black America. Like I said, this was written in 1994. He did do a new preface, back in 2001. But it's about the lack of Black leadership. And in this country, you know, we have African Americans have not had a Black leader, a real Black leader since, I don't know, you know, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Fannie Lou Hamer, and the like. Because one of the things that Dr. Cornel West wrote about is that these people who were those leaders back then cared about Black people. And they were genuinely upset about the plight of Black America, or more so the plight of all of poor Americans. Period. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I mean, that was the ultimate transformation of Dr. King, and that's what got it. And you can make the argument that's what got him killed, because when he realized there was a poor people problem.
Yeah, I think we talked about that. I think I mentioned that you know, and especially with Malcolm, when it became international, when it became just not about Black people, they had to get got. They got got.
Oh yeah, when you go on the march to Mecca. And you start seeing white folks?
White folks that are Muslims? They say, hey, wait. You know, blood, you know, for all this time as in prison and as a part of, you know, the Nation of Islam, you got him, you know, Farrakhan and, you know, then the like teller saying that, you know, blue-eyed devils. And don't get me wrong. We know that there are blue-eyed devils out there. Don't get it twisted.
I got blue eyes.
But you're not a devil. You're a sweetie. But is Santorum, are his eyes blue?
I wouldn't be surprised.
And the Boner, are his eyes blue?
I'm not sure about the Boner. I think his eyes are orange, because he's not from this planet. Just saying. Tracy? Oh, Tracy. I think AT&T got us again. I hate it when that happens. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob.
Cossack, what's happening, man?
Not much. Just came back from getting drained by the phlebotomist.
Oh, that just sounds so much not fun.
Well, they needed some blood samples. What the hell?
Oh, wait a minute. I was thinking podiatrist. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Phlebotomist.
No, I was thinking, wow, they're oh, the feet? Yeah. Oh, okay. No, a phlebotomist, right. Yeah. I got to go give a quart and a half or something sometime soon, too. So, no, I sympathize.
And, no, actually, Santorum's got brown eyes just showing what he's full of.
Right, exactly. It's all the way up to his skull. And it's probably frothy. Oh, totally. I was thinking of you the other day when I saw the promos come out. You're going to want to be glued to your TV set at 9 o'clock next Monday night.
Hmm.
Bourdain is going to Chernobyl.
Oh, that'll be interesting. Actually, I'm going to be glued to the TV tomorrow night.
Really?
Yep. 10:30 your time, 9:30 my time. Thing called Russian Dolls on Lifetime.
Hmm.
Russian women in the U.S.
Ah.
And from what I can see, the lust of my life is going to be on there.
Oh, yeah?
Irina Orlova.
Ah.
You ever check out Hot for Words?
Yeah, oh, yes. Yes.
If you get Lifetime on...
Yeah, what's Russian for Hubba Hubba? Yeah, I love the Hot for Words series on YouTube.
And she's great. She's a doctor, actually.
Oh, doctor, it hurts when I do this. Stop. Now, wait. No, we're going to drag this show down into the mud. Now, stop it, Cossack.
Yeah. Boner's got green eyes.
Oh, are they green?
Yeah.
Reptilian?
To match his orange.
Well, it kind of goes, you don't think of them going together, but anytime you've ever seen those Miami Hurricanes uniforms, the green and the orange works well.
Yeah.
See, it's August, Cossack, and I'm beginning to vibrate with college football fever.
Oh, I know.
Everything is an opportunity to, yeah.
I'm wondering to see what's going to happen with my team, which Maryland. Maryland.
Oh, dear.
Maryland.
The terrible Terrapins.
Yeah. Well, they used to be good at one time. Yeah, when they had Boomer Esiason playing for them.
Oh, they've ruined my fair share of Saturdays. So, yeah.
They used to be decent. Now they're less than decent.
Well, they had a couple of good years when Ralph Friedgen first got there, but that didn't last.
Yeah. And now that they've gotten rid of him, I'm kind of curious to see what's going to happen.
Well, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it was a halfway decent season this year. No, you know, it's like, oh, wow, from back in my salad days. No matter how badly you play golf, If you get a new set of golf clubs in your hand, you will shave 5 or 10 strokes the first round you play with that new set of golf clubs. Then you're back to all your old bad habits and they suck again. And it's always the clubs. I can't remember the last time I played golf.
That's when you break them over your knee and throw them in the water.
I've seen it happen. Truly, I have.
Keep thinking of Caddyshack and the Cardinal.
Rat fart!
And his final hole. That's always amusing.
You know, I don't think the heavy stuff's going to come down for quite some time. Exactly.
I haven't had a game like this in my life. It's the best game of my life. Oh, goddamn. Bam!
Love it. You just wish that actually happened.
Well, it gets close to happening. There are a lot of people that...
No, but I'll forgive a bishop for the occasional... You know, I mean, there's a million golf jokes, but... No, if anybody's going to get the lightning bolt treatment, it should be people like Rick Santorum.
Oh, God, yes.
You know, the very idea that he can't think about two guys or two women who love each other with all their heart and all their soul without immediately thinking about... fivesomes. You know, what a depraved mind he has. Now, and you know what, that's not a slur on fivesomes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if there are five people out there and five people consent and it makes them all happy, get with it.
I agree.
But there's a far cry between that and marriage.
Yeah.
I mean, well, I mean, you know, how can he be this kind of, you know, you for a guy to profess, oh, yeah, I believe in the Bible, and you don't know about David's 400 concubines or however the hell many there were?
Yeah, I think it's something like 400. Something in that area.
You know, and the Queen of Sheba just comes wandering into Jerusalem, and Solomon says, I got to have that. Well, you're already married. What's one more?
Room for one more. Absolute lunacy. And, you know, isn't it amazing that Alberta Darling was losing all through the night, and then at the very tail end, she won?
Yeah, somebody found 5,000 votes on their iPhone, I'm sure. What are these 5,000 votes doing on my BlackBerry?
Well, guess what one of the areas of her constituency is?
Oh, no.
Shaw County. Yes, sir. It's the same computer.
And as Brad Friedman noted, no way of hand counting.
Correct.
None. Oh, you want a recount? Oh, here, let me. Okay, we've had a recount. Same.
Yep. I just, why in God's name is it so difficult to understand that you need to have a paper trail? I mean, it's not difficult for me to.
Well, no. Well, wait. Paper, and this is true. I'm not just being a jerk. Paper trails are for losers.
Well,
if you're, you know, if you're cooking the pot, if you're the one who knows that it's a boat race, if the fix is in, you don't want no stinking paper trail.
No. And
I mean, you know, I think about this stuff and that story that got so short shrift, Cossack. That story that. From a couple of weeks ago, you know, when we found out that, yeah, really, the Bush administration did steal the election in Ohio in 2004. Did you notice that one?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nobody in the streets.
Well, nobody but,
and
didn't hear it.
Well, right, you know.
In for-profit media.
Right. And so, you know, I see the announcement yesterday of whom Harry Reid has chosen to sit on his segment of the Super Congress.
Oh God, who?
Well, I don't have a problem with Patty Murray, out of Washington.
Yeah.
She's been, you know, she's far from awful.
Right.
The other two, Max Baucus.
Oh crap.
Yeah, and I had a feeling I was going to get one of those from you. But yeah, Max. Max, who you don't need to go to the doctor, Baucus. And the third one, and this is why I'm making John Kerry.
Oh, boy.
What we need is to get our nation's house back in order. I don't know. Maybe it's a secret plan by Harry Reid to torment the other nine. Chair recognizes yeah. Senator Kerry. Thank you. I have a few remarks. But Max Baucus?
Well, you know who wrote Baucus's health care bill, don't you?
I figured it was the health care industry.
Well, pretty close. Up until a couple of months before she started working for Baucus, I forget her name, I believe it's Ellen something, she was working for United Healthcare.
No kidding. How do you do? How do you like that?
Jesus. And then we wonder why we got such a crappy bill. Well, that's why. Nothing but a big wet kiss to the
Yeah, but there, so, so, you know, there, we won't even get a sop from Harry Reid. No Bernie Sanders for us.
No, hell no.
And I guess it's a pretty safe bet that there won't be any Dennis Kucinich on the Nancy Pelosi team.
No, hell no. I mean, he couldn't have put Boxer on there, could he?
Yeah, well, no. I mean, hateful liberal.
We need some more hateful liberals. And in case you didn't realize it, the election of Wisconsin was literally the most expensive local elections ever in this country. And nine-tenths of that came from the Koch brothers, Club for Growth, all these wonderful groups. You know, the... keep on line. The Chamber of Commerce. Those wonderful people.
Yeah. So it's no surprise, maybe.
Well, you know when you.
But the thing is, you know that when it comes around for time for Chinless Mitch the Turtle Man. And Boner to appoint their side, they're going to, you know, Paul Ryan's got to be a shoe-in.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and a couple of the other real lunatics from the House, you know, maybe Paul Brown. He's crazy enough. And then out of the Senate, you know, Jim DeMint, okay. Tom Coburn. I mean, yeah. Coburn was already on the Gang of 13 or whatever it was. So the right wing will play to its base.
Oh, yeah.
And appoint people who are stark, raving, running mad. And we get John Kerry.
I lost any respect I may have had for him right after the 2004 election.
Oh, I lost respect for him when he ran away from Ohio with a $45 million war chest.
Yeah.
And then went and... I hate even reliving this crap, Cossack. And then went and had Christmas dinner in Sun Valley, Idaho, Mitt Arnold, who had called him a girly man. Arnold... I just wanted to tell you there's no hard feelings. I mean, do you think people finish John Kerry's sentences for him?
They must, or else they would never get finished. I mean, for crying out loud, people.
The stupid, it hurts.
It burns, it burns.
Well, I'm glad to know you, got through your adventure with the phlebotomist okay.
Yeah. Didn't drain me too much, so.
Yeah, you're not completely pale?
No.
Good. Well, we will talk soon, then.
Yep, sir.
All right. Take care, Cossack.
You too, Bob.
Bye now.
Say hi to Agnes and the kids.
Oh, I sure will. See ya.
All right.
Bye. People are going to start throwing things, at least cybernetically, if I do the John Kerry impression one more time. Although, I got to admit, I saw Lottie in the chat room here. Nah, it's not working yet, Bob. I'm not asleep. John Kerry, Max Baucus. What's Patty Murray got to work with? Not bloody much. I can't wait to see the Pelosi appointments. Really, I can't. Stunning. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Oh. Well, you know what? I bet that was Tracy. Maybe she'll call back. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, hi. This is Ivan in Florida.
Ivan, how are you? Good to hear from
good,
you.
Good. Thank you, thank you. I'm the one who sent you that email about trying to get you off the grid.
Yes, indeed, and I appreciate it because you started the ball rolling.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. We're investigating all of this stuff quite seriously.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I'm glad to hear that.
How are you?
Good, good. And, you know, just here with my wife. I wanted to share my motivation behind that first email.
Okay, sure.
Well, you see, at first I was checking out how to go off the grid for, like, you know, my own house and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
And I was looking into it, and, well, the first thing you find out is basically it can be done, you know. It's completely within, you know, current technology and all that. And you can do it even going, like, completely off, you know, with the battery, so...
Oh, I know people up here who are completely off.
Yeah, so to me, I mean, to me it was kind of an eye-opener because I never look at this stuff around, you know, so it was... Because you hear all these lies about, no, the technology is not there, you know, it cannot be done and all this, but when you start looking around, you realize it can be done, you know, it's fairly simple, actually.
You just have to calculate your actual needs.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a matter of sizing it and whatnot. So, well.
No, I had a rather lengthy conversation with a person who was sent my way by our good friend from the chat room, Mr. Gibson. And these guys are pros, and they install lots and lots and lots of solar. And what I found out is that it is possible. I guess the trend has changed some, Ivan. It used to be that it was all about buying the panels, but now companies are moving into the leasing, the long-term leasing market.
Oh, okay.
So that you're still paying a bill every month, but you're not paying it to the power company, and you're off the grid, and they maintain it. It's not your problem.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it could be pretty exciting. Of course, that's the solar end of things. I also want to investigate wind as well, because I'd like to have the whole mix going for the horn.
Right, right.
I mean, I learned amazing things. One of the things that I learned was that solar panels much prefer cold weather to hot weather.
Yeah.
So winter is not a problem.
Right, because the heat makes them less efficient, I think.
Yes, exactly.
Right. So anyway, I was looking on that, and, well, it's kind of expensive for just, you know, an individual to do it. So, I don't know, I kind of was thinking, you know, we kind of should get basically what would be the progressive voice. Maybe we should get them, you know, out of this fossil fuel mess, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And I think, you know, I hope we can get you off the grid of this because you're the most, that more expresses the issues about the environment and all those things. So I hope we can do that, and I'll try to help any way I can.
Well, I appreciate it, and I appreciate the inspiration that you put behind it and the challenge that you put behind it. If it turns out that we go with this leasing route, you know, one of the nicest things is that we don't have to come up with, you know, some harrowing amount of money. We just have to come up with enough to make sure that we can pay the bill every month.
Right.
And that is, that's a lot less daunting than coming up with $150,000.
Right. Yeah, I understand. Well, yeah, I guess if it works, sure. Yeah, I understand. But you know, even then, and you know, either route, I think it can be done, because the way I see it is like, you know, when some progressive comes up with a book and goes in a book and he's like everywhere, in a way, it doesn't necessarily have to be people that just listen to you. It would be like just, you know, like-minded people, maybe they'll come
exactly.
Well, helping out, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and there's such a great degree of importance to doing it in a place like West Virginia. Because this is an area, you're in Florida, and you've heard, well, you know, the technology doesn't really exist. Yes, it does. But up here in West Virginia, it is taken as an article of religious faith that we simply cannot live, Ivan, without coal. And just to have an ordinary little house that's paying a bill that's less than an electric power bill for solar, and is absolutely disconnected from any of the filthy business that goes with mountaintop removal, coal extraction, coal burning, anything, is awesome. You know, earlier today I got a video sent to me from our good friend Jude up in Washington. And it was a PSA, and it's real easy to find. It's called Quit Coal, QUITCOAL.org, okay. quitcoal.org/PSA. And it is a moving PSA from people, just ordinary folks all over the country, who want their friends, their neighbors, their family, their colleagues, their beloveds, the members of their community, want them to stop dying of coal-related diseases.
Okay.
Because coal kills about in excess of 40,000 people a year who have nothing to do with the coal industry, who don't live in Appalachia, who just breathe the filth that comes from it, and it kills them. In excess of 40,000 Americans a year. And on top of that, then there's all the cancers and birth defects that come with living where I live.
Right.
And if we could do something such as you suggested, such as getting the horn off the grid, this place could serve as a model for other homes to get away from the coal industry, we would put a great big sharpened stick, a wooden stake, through the vampiric filthy heart of the coal industry, because this is the heart of the coal industry. And how
Absolutely.
I would, oh Ivan, how I would love to be the one who drives that stake.
Yeah, I hope it happens. So you know about, you know how they say there's always, like, the fish has mercury on it?
Oh, yes.
And you shouldn't, like, even if it's from wild caught, you shouldn't eat so many times a week. And so I'm seeing the news, and what's this about mercury in the fish? Where does this mercury come from? I mean, it's not like in the thermostat or anything like it used to be, so... I'm like, where does it come from? Then I go into the internet and start reading. Well, it comes from coal. The burning goes to the atmosphere and comes back to the ocean, and you eat it on the fish.
Right. The fish can, the fish eat the things that have there's something even more evil about mercury, Ivan, and that is that mercury is accumulative.
It goes up the food chain.
Well, and not just that. Your body stores it and doesn't get rid of it. So that it just builds up and builds up and builds up over time in your system. You know, one of the most terrifying statistics about mercury in this country is the fact that you can go to any woman, practically, for any woman for all intents and purposes of childbearing years in this country, you can take a sample of her hair, You can send it off to a lab, and the results that you get back will show that any woman of childbearing age in this country already has enough mercury in her system from the burning of coal in power plants to account for 10 less points of IQ.
Wow.
In any baby she bears.
Wow. Yeah, the whole thing is just absurd. I mean,
that's the difference between mental retardation and so-called average. That's the difference between average and above average, and it's the difference between above average and genius.
Right. Yeah.
And those are the ones who survive. Never mind the ones that are... never mind. Shame on me. But that's without mentioning the ones who are killed by it.
Right. And they lose their baby and all these things.
Right. So I really appreciate you being out front on this issue and informing yourself and educating yourself and providing the impetus for us to consider this as a long-term project for the Horn, because I tell you what, nothing would thrill me more than to have the intro to this program say, "No mountains were harmed in the making of this program. This is a solar-powered radio show."
That would be great. Well, I think it really would.
Indeed.
Well, I mean, it's just absurd. Like here in the U.S., they invent the solar cell, they invent the right batteries, they invent everything, and now we don't make any of them. It's just ridiculous.
Yes.
But, yeah, just got to deal with it, I suppose.
Well, and some of us will deal with it by trying to advance into the future. It's like Albert calling from Wisconsin last night said, you know, if it was up to him, we'd be putting solar panels on every rooftop in every house in America. And suddenly we wouldn't have a coal problem anymore.
Right. Maybe we'll have an excess electricity problem in reality.
It would be a beautiful thing. You know, there's a, 45 square mile area in the southwestern desert, maybe Nevada, Arizona, I'm not sure which, but that 45 square mile area has enough sun pouring onto it day in and day out to power the entire United States of America and then some. There's enough wind in just a chunk of North Dakota to provide wind power to the entirety of the United States of America. The only thing standing between that and now, and between the future and now, is that we haven't done the hard engineering, scientific research to re-envision a power grid that can get the electricity from North Dakota and Arizona to the rest of the country.
Right.
And maybe we don't have to. If we expand, if plans like this, whereby one can lease solar panels, become... And, I mean, the numbers that I was given were in absolutely feasible.
That's good.
So, you know, if we prove it can be done, then you know, who knows? Maybe the company that does this... might want to become a long-term sponsor of the program in partial exchange for doing this for us, and we become goodwill ambassadors of getting off the grid to people all over the country. That is in my book, Ivan. That's living life well and right.
Yes. I hope it happens. You know, it'll be a good statement to make. You know, so we can say when the next time you hear some person say, "No, it cannot be done." What do you mean it cannot be done? I know a guy you can listen to him every night. Not a single lump of coal was burned to run that program.
Exactly. Ivan, it's so good to talk to you. You have survived your first phone call. I hope there will be many more.
I'll try because I work off hours, so.
I understand.
I'm actually on vacation.
Oh, well, enjoy your vacation then.
Yeah, I'll try.
All right. Take care, my friend.
All right. Thank you, Bob.
Bye.
Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Ivan, first-time caller from Florida, the originator of the Get the Horn Off the Grid idea. And it's one of the most inspiring ideas that I have, or that has been presented to me. It's a beautiful thing. And really, to drive a giant stake into the filthy black heart of the coal industry and do it right here in West Virginia and look at them and say, "Eat it!" Oh, that would feel real good. Because I guess I'm just mean that way. Or trying to get my jobs. Well, as my good friend Vernon says, you mean we have to make sure you get another job before you'll stop poisoning our children? F 'em. I got nothing for 'em. Nothing. They are poisoning our children. How am I supposed to get all misty-eyed about their jobs and their four-wheelers and the brand-new light bulbs for their tanning beds every summer? Sorry, that one just gets by me. I know, I should be better at the kumbaya stuff, but sometimes I just can't. Just can't. Rolling onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello, is this Bob?
This is Bob.
Do you remember some guys from WD40.com?
I sure do.
Well, this is Ed.
Well, hey, Ed, how are you? You know, I was thinking about Kenny just earlier today when I was playing that NASCAR song. Agnes came back here and she heard it and she said, "Oh my God, Kenny'd be having a fit."
Yeah, well, come to think of it, I was just thinking about him too today, so. But that's pretty much every day for me.
You'd be surprised how many days it is for me too.
Well, I'm calling, and I'm not really calling about anything in particular. I haven't called you for a long time.
No, but I apparently conjured you up because when Agnes said Kenny would be having a fit, I thought of you, and here you are. See, that's how the magic works.
I guess it is. Well, I'm calling you about something that struck me particularly funny today.
Okay.
And I don't know if you'll see the humor in it or not, but you remember, I live in Northwest Iowa where it's illegal to be a Democrat.
Pretty much, yes.
Yes. Okay, but, so, on my drive home from work, I usually listen to Sean Hannity.
You're a better man than I am, Ed. Much better.
It's more for the comedic value. And
do you have the windows open and you're screaming the whole time? I mean, I don't know how I'd handle it.
Well, I laugh a lot when I'm driving listening to it because I can't get you on there. So
well, if you get yourself an Android smartphone, you can.
Oh well, heck, I can't figure out how to run the phone I got.
Okay, well, I understand.
Okay. Well, anyway, this is the point. Sean Hannity. I don't know if have you ever listened to it?
Sadly, yes.
Okay. Have you ever listened to his theme song?
Yes.
Okay. And the first words that come out on the theme song were sung by Martina McBride, "Let Freedom Ring."
Right.
Right? Okay. Do you think that Sean knows what that song is about?
I gotta think he doesn't. Because I know what that song's about.
Because Sean portrays himself to be the perfect family man. It's gotta be a mom and dad and kids. And the song is actually about a daughter singing about her mother and her drunk father. And in the end, when her mother's had enough, her drunk father's in bed sleeping and she burns the house down.
Yes.
Well, that just seems kind of odd to me. Do you see the humor I'm seeing in this? Or?
Oh, no. It absolutely slays me. Agnes knows that song better than I do, and we were actually driving down the road one day, Ed, and Hannity came on.
And my name is Kurt. My name is Kurt.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but okay. Ed, you were Ed to me long before you were Kurt. Yeah.
Well, that's my middle name, so I'm still Ed, I guess.
But we were driving, and Agnes heard that song introing Hannity, and she's, Hannity? Really? Does this dummy even know what the song's about?
And I was just curious if you thought he knew what it was about. So you have a better way of letting that kind of information out, because I'd like to see, after somebody lets that information out, if his theme song changes.
You know what? Here is my theory. And it's this. I think Hannity knows what that song is about. I think using that song is a great big inside joke on his idiot freezing water IQ audience. I think he laughs at them every time he hears Let Freedom Ring, because all of these right-wing asshats know that their listeners are morons. They know what their listenership is. Just like I know the profound intelligence of the audience that listens to the horn. Because I have proof of it every day. Well, they get proof of it every day too. They get emails that are, you know, typed in Martian. You know, they get notes from teabaggers. And they have to know that they are dealing with genuine mouth breathing, knuckle walking freaks. And so I think it's an inside joke by Hannity on his own audience. It's kind of like the intro music for Limbaugh. Now, you know, here's the Pretenders, Chrissy Hynde, no conservatives by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
And he opens his program every day with a song that I used to love by the Pretenders that I can't stand to hear anymore, called My City Was Gone.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to hold it against the Pretenders, because I kind of like Chrissy Hynde, too, myself. So.
Oh, I don't hold it against the Pretenders, either, but it's an inside joke.
That's what I'm thinking. It's like, you know, kind of like they used Tom Petty's song during some campaigns. He said, cut it out.
Yeah.
They used, I believe, Bon Jovi. He said, cut it out.
Reagan used Bruce Springsteen. He said, stop it.
Right. He said, cut it out. Well, what I'm trying to figure out is how can anybody get the information out to the people that are listening to that so they know that he's... Because he's just pretty much a two-faced bastard as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you know, you've raised a good question. What I think I'll do is I'll get on my Twitter feed, and I will put that question out, and I will send it to one of the Twitter lists that is attended by right-wing knuckle walkers. And we'll find out.
And I would make sure, you know, you gotta kind of point out the fact to them that he claims to be the family man, where there's got to be a mom and dad and all this other stuff, and a dysfunctional family like that is no good, according to him and Limbaugh and all these other people. Well, how can you use something from such a dysfunctional bunch to promote your product? That's what I'm trying, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's where I see the comedy in that.
Well, the show is probably wealthy enough that they pay ASCAP or BMI, and consequently they can play any song they want to. And the artist gets royalties. So that covers that part. But no, you asked the larger question, and I think it's one worth seeking an answer to. And I'm gonna go off down the rabbit hole and see if I can get an answer.
Well, now, is there any way I can listen to you online?
Yeah, I'm online. That's the only way you can listen.
Well, where do I find you? Because I looked and looked all over, and all I could find was your phone number.
If you go to headonradionetwork.com, there's a listen live button right there. There's a listen live button at whiterosesociety.org. And
okay, hold on.
And of course the podcasts are available over at White Rose Society as well as iTunes.
I looked all over for listen lives, and I couldn't find it. All I could find was on August 3rd, played hooky.
That's search engines being funny. But, yeah, just head on radionetwork.com. And there are two listen live options right there that open up. You can either open up a Java player, or you can listen through Real Player or Windows Media Player. I mean, there's all kind.
I've got all that stuff on my computer.
Yeah, it comes right up. And like I was saying, if you ever figure out your phone, like you mentioned, you can even listen in the car now.
So I'm still using the same phone I've been using for the past 5 years.
Yeah, well,
the battery won't go dead, so I'm not getting a new one.
You know what? That's probably wise. Because the new phones, the batteries suck.
Because
they do so much.
Well, I only use it for calling guys like you and stuff, so ain't no big deal.
Or
my wife calling me.
That's so 20th century, man, only using a phone for a phone.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much about all I use it for. But I'll tell you what, dude, it's really good to talk to you.
Oh, it's good to talk to you, too. And, you know, knowing that you're up in Iowa, man, keep an eye out, because Rick Santorum's making the rounds up there. And, I mean, he's doing some high-caliber philosophizing.
I'm sure he is.
Yeah.
I'm sure he is. Well, we just had Dole Deer in the Headlights Bachman here the other day.
Oh, what a charmer she is.
Well, man, that girl, she's out there.
Well, you know, she went to, I mean, I'm sure you must have seen the story. She went to Waterloo, Iowa. Which was where she was born, and she said, "And I want to live in America just like John Wayne's Iowa." Only problem was John Wayne wasn't born in Waterloo. John Wayne Gacy was.
John Wayne was born in Winterset.
Right.
That's where he was from. Yeah, she screwed that up.
But John Wayne Gacy, the serial killer, was born in Waterloo.
Well, at least she was right about John Wayne, I guess.
I want to live in America like the America a serial killer lived in.
So,
we'll all dress like clowns and bury little boys under our house.
I haven't seen anybody worth a damn for them. I mean, if it ain't Tea Party, it ain't nothing. You know, I mean,
Gotta be careful what you say, Kurt, because, man, that sounds like a Tea Party bumper sticker. If it ain't Tea Party, it ain't nothing.
All right, well, just put my initials on the bottom.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get you some royalties.
Or put Kenny's on there.
That sounds good.
So, you do have Kenny's on there.
All things being equal, you doing okay?
Oh, we're doing great. Well, in the words of Billy Joel, I got a new wife, I got a new life, and the family is fine.
No complaints.
I've been divorced and remarried. Now I have a nice acreage, and I don't live in the city no more. I go to the city only to see my kids, and one of my kids, his wife, just got a big deal working for Cabela's in the graphic design department, so they're moving out there. And then my other son, he'll be graduating from college here in December or January, something like that. His wife graduated college before him, so then he went, and then they're going to move to Denver, so... Everything's good.
What do you hear from the other WD-40 boys? Anything?
I tried to get a hold of them. I haven't heard a thing. All there was the morning constitution, and I tried to get a hold of them, and I did for a while, and then all of a sudden it was just over.
Well, if you do hear anything from them, tell them I think about them often, and I'd love to hear from them.
You know, I think Kenny was the driving force behind that.
Oh, I think absolutely. Absolutely.
And he's the one that kept them going, and I think they finally just moved on to other things.
Well, you know, but I doubt their hearts changed. And
oh, no. They're still on our side.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
And you know, one of the great things that I feel like I missed out on in my life was not sitting down for one of the strategy sessions there in that tavern somewhere in Kansas City.
Oh, that was fun. That was fun. In fact, Kenny's picture is still up there. I was down there about 6 months ago and stopped in and had a beer.
Oh, wonderful.
Same spot in that little corner they used to sit at.
Wow.
So, everything's all good there, too. So.
Well, Kurt, it's great to hear from you, brother.
Yeah, you too, Bob. So, I'll try to keep in touch a little more and let you know what's going on up here in the...
Oh, do please, yeah. And if there's any teabagger craziness breaks out, I want you to be there, our man on the ground there.
Oh God, I work with about 60 of them. half of them can't count, but.
Well, you know, under those circumstances, then coming home listening to Sean Hannity's like a step up, because I mean he's a teabagger, but not, you know. Well.
To me it's comedy. He's a BSer is what he is, and somehow he made it doing that. I wish I could make it doing that, because I'd sure as hell do it.
Well, that's one of the great ongoing inquiries of my life, how you can be that stupid and make that much money. Stunning.
Oh, I think, he's way smarter than he's at. He just knows that that's where the money's at. And he's using that to his advantage.
Right, and there's a system in place that pays people to talk that kind of hateful stupidity. We don't have that system in place on our side, simply put.
He can't be that dumb. There's no way. There's no way in the world the man can believe the things he says. There's no way.
Well, if you're paid enough, you can believe just about anything.
Well, he'll act like he believes it, but when he goes home at night, he don't believe it. He laughs on his way home. He probably listens to God knows what on the way home.
Oh, God, no. I can't stand the thought of Sean Hannity on his Android going, all right, Bob Kincaid makes some sense.
But I would really like it to get out there that that's what the song is about that leads into his show, and he portrays himself to be such a family man and all this other stuff. And I would like to see it get out far enough to where he changes his intro tune. Because if that happens, that would prove to me that I got it to you and you got it out there and he found out about it.
Well, let me share something with you before you go, Kurt. This came in from our buddy Michael, who did some scripting and stuff back for a program he started called The People's Mixtape. He said, I've got some additional info regarding that Martina McBride song. Some of you may know that right-wing blowhard and all-around dickhead Sean Hannity uses the chorus of that song as part of his radio show's theme music. That is because he has shit for brains. Now, from what I've read, the songwriter, Gretchen Peters, Martina McBride is the performer. Gretchen Peters is the songwriter. And she, from what I have read, did try to fight Hannity over his use of the song, but to no avail. So she instead donates all of her proceeds to liberal organizations such as PFLAG, Move On, and the ACLU, so good on her. But apparently the tone-deaf right wing had to take their idiocy one step further, and Sarah Palin used part of Independence Day during her 2008 vice presidential run. Regarding that, I found this quote from songwriter Gretchen Peters, who wrote the song. The fact that the McCain-Palin campaign is using a song about an abused woman as a rallying cry for their vice presidential candidate, a woman who would ban abortion even in cases of rape and incest, is beyond irony. They are co-opting the song, completely overlooking the context and message, and using it to promote a candidate who would set women's rights back decades. I've decided to donate the royalties from Independence Day during this election cycle to Planned Parenthood in Sarah Palin's name. I hope with the additional income provided by the McCain-Palin campaign, Planned Parenthood will be able to help many more women in need. Michael notes, that's pretty awesome, I must say. What Gretchen Peters said, but Sean Hannity and the McCain-Palin campaign? Lord Almighty, stupid, stupid, stupid. See, if you pay attention to the song, it is told from the perspective of an 8-year-old girl whose abused mother finally fights back against her abuser. The song's apparent patriotic and revolutionary imagery is clearly being used as a metaphor for the abused woman's struggle. So while it's one thing to say this or that song makes me think of this and makes you think of that, many songs are open to interpretation or reinterpretation. What Hannity and Palin did with this song was to just suck every shred of meaning right out of it. Dumb. Michael notes, also my understanding was that Chrissy Hynde tried to fight Limbaugh's use of My City Was Gone, but to no avail. I once saw Pearl Jam play a short blip of that song in Cleveland. Broke my damned heart. I'm sure they know. And that's the thing. It, you know, if you sign on to take royalties from, via ASCAP, BMI, whatever, if you sign on to take the royalties, you don't get a choice in who uses your music. So, yeah, Chrissy Hynde was stuck, and Gretchen Peters was stuck. And yeah, the right wing can do anything with it they want to. But if you're not paying...
The people that are really getting stuck are the people that are listening to them. They're the ones really getting stuck because they think they don't understand what it's about.
No.
Because, I mean, if I was a teabagger, which I'm not, but if I was and I heard that song, I would call Sean Hannity myself and ask him, why are you playing that song for your lead-in? Because I know what the song's about.
But right-wingers don't. And as a consequence, I think the initial theory is correct. Sean Hannity knows exactly what the song is about, and it's a big old inside joke on his brain-dead listeners.
And it's, well, I guess they're dumb enough to listen to it, but I just thought, I got to thank Michael for that, because it proved I was right about what I thought about the song.
Exactly. Well, don't be a stranger, Kurt, okay?
No, I won't. I will call you back.
All right. You take care, my friend.
All right. Good talking to you, Bob.
Good talking to you, too.
Hey, yeah.
Yeah.
Tell Agnes I said hi.
All right. I sure will.
I haven't. How come she didn't answer the phone today?
That's well, she doesn't. She doesn't work back here. She's back. She's in the front office.
Oh, well, last time I called, I talked to her first.
Right.
And she's just as much fun to talk to you as you are.
Probably more so.
Well, I didn't want to go that far.
Well,
I didn't want to go that far.
Yeah, but I know. You guys go way back.
Yes, we do. All right. We'll talk to you later. Bye.
All right. Take care, Kurt. Bye now.
Okay, bye.
And that is our good old friend Kurt, one of the fabulous foursome of what was once WD40.com, which was my go-to website every day back when it was up and running, WD40.com. WD40.com sort of fell apart in the wake of the death of our buddy Kenny, who went by Clyde. It was Clyde, Wally, Dookie, and Ed, whom you just heard. What a website that was. And I miss them all dearly, especially Clyde Kenny. He was killed in a car wreck the night before Halloween or Halloween night of 2008, as we were all awaiting and hoping for the election of Barack Obama and the change that we could believe in. Note coming in from David in Tennessee. Hannity's listening choices. He listens to personally made podcasts done for him by Mistress Excretia, his well-paid dominatrix. Crack that whip! Mistress Excretia. Sounds like she needs to be working with Brother Frothy Mixture. Just saying. Jude noting with regard to the Creation Arc Park, they're providing property tax discounts, and the state agreed to provide $43 million in tax incentives. Hey. It is stunning to consider it. Jude asking me to sometime try to get Leah Burton on the program, and I need to do that. She started God's Own Party and is a wealth of information on the Dominionists. I will make contact with her. That would be a fascinating conversation. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert, I conjured you too.
Oh, Mistress Excretia. What? That's like my mom, Mistress Excretia. Oh, that's funny stuff. Good stuff. Good stuff. You know, I don't know, Wisconsin, what are you going to do?
You got your guy.
Oh, we destroyed 56-44. That's a crush right there. I mean, that's destruction. But, I mean, isn't it? 56-44, man.
Yeah, that's a whipping.
And, you know, especially he's two-time incumbent, so. I don't understand what happened, and I'm telling you right now, we all know about Waukesha County and what's her name. I can't know.
Nicholas.
Yeah, don't talk like that. It's our Catherine Harris. That's who
right.
She is.
The only reason I can remember her name is I think of Jack Nicholas.
Yeah, I do too, but that's why I don't want to, so we won't do it.
Yeah, that's kind of unfair to Jack, isn't it?
Isn't it? I mean, come on.
I mean, he's a Republican and everything, but not that
true,
kind.
No, I don't know about it. It's just, but, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm telling you right now, I mean, they've already been watching her because it's not the first time, it's not the second time or third time. It's, you know, I think we're going on, you know, we're almost probably going on double digits with this person. But anyway, you know, the first caller, a beautiful thing, right? He's talking about, you know, you guys are talking, and when I jumped in, it was on Tucson and North Dakota wind farms and so on and so forth. You know, and that would be a beautiful thing to have, you know, that, as you know, as we talk about, you know, a topic that breaks the bell. However, in this country, we have guys with two master's degrees, you know, a guy in plasma physics and electrical engineering, and he can't find a job, so he's homeless.
That is entirely too sadly true.
What? if there's any group of people that I could say, oh, man, you know, like, you know, we got to get him, that would be a guy who knows plasma physics and electrical engineering. We need that guy. You know,
yeah, but we need him not to be selling the occasional bag of diapers and six packs of Bud Light at the Rippy Mart. We need him to be doing plasma physics.
Electrical engineering, my goodness.
Yeah. Inventing Smart Grid 2.0.
Yeah.
Not asking, do you want fries with that?
Wow. That's pretty...
So is it kind of grim in Wisconsin today?
We have a little kitty I had to bury today.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a sad thing. The girls are completely, all the girls. I shed a tear or two. She's cute, but she just didn't want to stay inside. So what are you going to do?
Oh, bad things happen.
Well, she pees if she stays inside, and I can't have a house smell like pee. And so if I let her outside and let her come back in, she's happy. And so, apparently she just got hurt. So. And then, you know, we didn't completely get the sweep, but however, we still won.
Yeah, you got 2 out of 6.
And that's better than nothing.
And there are more coming, right?
But they're going to keep their seats, so hopefully. But
I get it.
Yeah. It's like, it's payday, yeah. So, you know, I personally, you know, I don't know. I don't really count the other one in, what's her name, Darling.
Yeah.
I don't count. There's something fishy with that. Prosser than her. And Prosser is another guy. The guy sitting there, you know, I mean, I don't know, I haven't heard nothing of it. Maybe it's not nothing happened, but apparently he put his hands all over another Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, tried to choke her.
He tries to hold her back or something, but, you know, a choke and a hold back is a little bit different, you know, so whatever. What are you going to do about that?
Well, you generally don't hold somebody back by grabbing their neck from the front.
Kind of.
I mean, just saying.
Yeah, you don't have to do that. I mean, you could hold their shoulder or arm, you know, what's wrong with that, you know, or maybe back away. You know, I mean, I would think if you reach that, I mean, it's different with me, you know, or that starts happening with me, or here we are on the street, that's a little different. But, you know, when you were sitting here, even there, you know, you say, all right, hang on, you're a little crazy. You back up, you know, you kind of put distance between yourself and the other person. You know, there's ways to avoid. You don't have to sit there, especially a woman. You know, I'm not trying to say, you know, well, come on, ladies, you know, but you know what I'm saying. You know, you don't have to, especially with a woman, you don't put your hands on a woman, period. And then much less when you're a judge.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, this guy's a right-wing family values Republican. Where does he get off, you know, roughing up a woman?
Didn't that go hand in hand?
Oh,
like,
wait.
You don't have me playing that music. It's the same deal.
Let freedom ring.
Yeah, same deal. I mean, it's what it is. You know, they're just, you know, they're frauds. They're fake. They always are, and that's how it is. So, you know, it was like, I forget what I was watching, some documentary, you know, and they were talking about the, you know, the whole, how the repressed homosexuality and so on and so forth, and they did those studies back in the 70s that, you know, showed that the people with the homophobia, they're the ones with, you know, the latent desire, and, you know, hey, that's why we got, that's why they're tapping toes. And, you know, God, that scares me, to be in a restroom, in a big restroom. Not because of it, but just because, whoa, what is that? I don't even understand the whole scene. But then you look over and it's a Republican congressman? My God, that poor police officer.
Yeah, yeah, we really don't think enough about that, do we?
Oh, yeah, it's just a little bit, you know, I mean, that's not what I'm thinking of when I'm in one of those rooms, but that's some depraved. I mean, that's depraved, isn't it? I mean, wouldn't that be depraved if there was a definition of it? Something like that. So that's why it's that's them. You know, what are you going to do with them? That's how they roll. They play music that, you know, Rush Limbaugh. Well, we all know about Rush Limbaugh. Come on now, and they are doing it for the money. You know, I don't know how you sleep at night when you know, like that. I don't understand it. No. Like babies, they sleep.
That's because, you know, mattresses made up of wadded, you know, jillions of wadded up $100 bills. I mean, they can actually be kind of comfy once you get the starch out of the hundreds and get Benny nice, little Benny Franklin, get him nice and crinkly and stuff. It's no feather mattress, but it ain't bad.
Put a little support, sew it nice tight.
And when you're a Republican, the aroma's coming off that freshly printed money. I mean, that's like normal people having a hops pillow. I mean, it creates happy dreams. It puts you into this pleasant sleep space.
Mm.
Right.
Well, that's cocaine. You know, all the cocaine that's on that contaminates every dollar that we have in our hand. So, you know, what else are they going to buy from the Contras? Oh! Anyway, there's certain things we can never ever forget, and you know, sometimes Wisconsin does get a little crazy. You know, witness McCarthy error. You know, that came straight out of here. And sometimes I don't understand these people. I just don't. I'm not a local. I'm sorry. Sometimes I just look at them like, seriously? Are we even driving around today? You know, I had some errands to run, and I mean, I was driving through La Crosse, and you know, La Crosse is not a. I mean, I come from New York. You know, that's a city. You know. I mean, Chicago, yeah, there's a city there, you know, but La Crosse, it's not a city. It's basically a residential neighborhood, and you got your good parts and your bad parts, and you drive through your bad parts, and your bad parts are bad. You know, I mean, we're talking like, you know, just run down and, you know, cars and blah, blah, and, you know, rusted out cars, and it's just not good neighborhood. You could probably pick up a house there for $50,000, $40,000 if you want to do some work, probably even less. And you'll see Kapanky signs on the freaking lawn.
Oh yeah, that's the equivalent of the McCain-Palin sticker on the 1969 rusted out International Harvester pickup truck going down the road here in West Virginia.
Exactly. It's like, seriously.
Yeah, because those International Harvester engines, by God, they're good for a couple of million miles. The bodies aren't good for 15,000.
No, true. But yeah, I mean, you know, I told you about the Kapanky signs that he had up here. Maybe I didn't. Maybe I told you in my head. But, he's just sitting there, this guy. He's like, oh, you know, vote for me if you want, you know, oh, growing economy, all these glowing things. And the thing is, you know, I'll tell you what. The one nice thing, when you got this, whatever in this new round of, you know, they try to have to put as many bullet points as they could on each of their cards, be it Republican or Democrat. Now, the Republican cards would have bullet points on them, and they never have sources, ever. Never, ever, ever have sources, ever. The Democrat always had sources, so you can go and check the sources. Now, people can lie with sources, as we all know, but sources is a nice thing, because then I can at least check it, see, oh, you know, oh, wow, you're not only telling me the truth.
Yeah, but you get the Republican talking point card, because Jesus loves me.
Yeah. They don't put anything. They put nothing. And so he had a bunch of billboards. He had two of them. And they were basically about, you know, vote for me if you want, you know, if you want lollipops and rainbows, and, you know, vote for my opponent if you want death and, you know, rotten flesh. So today, after the election, they're gone. They're all gone. And they're big billboards. They're gone. They're overdone. They're painted over something else. Immediately. That was crazy to me. I mean, what do you mean he's done already? Usually, I mean, you know, it's a sign. I don't know. That's just crazy to me. Both of those signs, big signs, gone. Some now. Now it's somebody's chair and somebody's ice cream parlor. It's just, I was like, what? Yeah, so, yeah, he must have known or something. It's just ridiculous.
I mean, I think Kopanky knew that the handwriting was on the wall, so to speak.
Yeah, but I don't understand the rest of this state. I don't understand the rest of this state at all. I mean, maybe because we sort of have a mixture here of, you know, the organic people, and we have a bunch of union people out here because there were some factories out here, and, you know, so there's a working class. I mean, La Crosse is a working class city. There's, you know, you know, you don't, you're not, I mean, heck, I was even just killing time while the wife was in at a meeting. I drove down, I was driving with the kids, and I went onto the Nissan lot. You know, they have a Nissan lot. They don't even have a Maxima there.
Whoa.
I mean, they don't even
and, of course,
have
that's the, yeah, that's the flagship Nissan sedan, but it, you know, it comes in the door around 40 grand.
They do, but they don't even have one. And I went, down a little further down the road, and they have the Audi. There's no A8s on the lot. There's A4s, and there's one A6. No Touaregs, no Q7s. You know, we don't have that kind of, I mean, barely. Once in a while, they'll get it if somebody orders it or whatever, or the owner wants to drive it, but that's it. I couldn't believe it because I think actually the new Maxima was kind of sharp looking. I wanted.
Oh, it's a gorgeous car.
That's what I thought. You know, I just wanted to look at it. You know, so I was like, wow, that's just crazy. I even went on to, you know, I went and looked at all kinds of all the lots, and they didn't even have it. They didn't have a Prelude on the Honda. You know, like none of the higher end stuff is not there. So you know, this is a working class city, and it doesn't surprise me that, you know, for a place with the concentration that we do. You know, and plus, you know, we are getting immigrants from Chicago, so, you know hopefully this turns into a nice blue zone for a little bit, because we certainly could use it to fix up, you know, if Walker doesn't want to link, you know, the high-speed rail through the state, at least maybe we can link, you know, La Crosse and Minneapolis. You know, maybe we could do something like that. That would be handy to go out to the, you know, or maybe not be able to come east as easy, but it'd be nice to go out west. You know, but, you know, one way or the other, we're going to have to get these things done, and slowly but surely. And the other thing is his recall's coming. That boy, that man's gone. That man is not making it.
You say that with great confidence, Albert, but...
Oh, man, no doubt. There's no doubt about it. No doubt but whatsoever. Well, you gotta remember like this. Out here, like, I've seen Kopanky. I've seen him at the store. I mean, you run into these are state senators, and they do try to get out into people and see them and stuff. You know, like they're neighbors. They own. I mean, actually, I think Kopanky owns some land around me. You know, so they're, you know, they're kind of neighborly when they come to the state senate aspect. Maybe not so much. You know, Darling, and she's in Sensenbrenner's district, and you know, that's a lesion down there. Forget that place. So. But no, you know, there's a bunch of other spots, you know, and so if they do have their, it's more about their senator, they're my friend kind of thing, you know what I mean? I know him, and that makes them feel good, so they'll vote for him, even if they might not agree with all of his policies or whatever, or he'll tell them the right things about corn subsidies or what have you. Well, here, Kopanky, you know, it's not, we don't have such a monoculture crop out here. We do have a bunch of them, as you'll see, but we have way more people making bok choy and celerac and, you know, and fennel everywhere, and, you know, a lot of hippies around here. So, you know, that kind of breaks that farm union that they would have locked up, usually, with the big Monsanto, ConAgra, corn subsidy, welfare tit, you know, because they do, that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing, aren't they? Isn't corn subsidies, is that not welfare?
Last I checked, yes.
Okay, I'll say thanks. I just had to check. I mean, because it sounds like welfare to me, and, you know, I love that. They don't want to pay anyone else to pay no welfare. Man. And you would think farmers would have a better, bigger heart than that sometimes, but, you know.
But there's farming and there's farming. And you know what, ConAgra and you know, those the things that used to be small family farms that aren't anymore, that are vast tracts of industrially farmed, Roundup ready, number 2 field grade Monsanto modified corn with goat guts in the genetics, you know, that ain't farming.
No, sir.
And those are the people who like to get their subsidies. You know, Michelle Bachmann, you know, Ed, Kurt mentioned Michelle Bachmann. You know, here it's just stunning, Albert. Here's a woman who took federal government welfare to help her buy her house. And her family has drawn hundreds of thousands of dollars from their farming. And her husband has taken federal money to help run his Homo Nomo clinic. But they're against big government. And it's in many ways, it's like what I said about Sean Hannity using that song. It's a big inside joke on the rubes.
Yes, sir.
And that's what teabaggers are. They're marks. They're rubes. They're the people walking along the carnival midway who are just sure if they plunk down another $10 bill, they're finally going to shoot all three balloons with the BB gun with the crooked barrel. I mean, God almighty, I know about the crooked barrel BB gun because I grew up watching Andy Griffith. But I guess the teabaggers were busy watching Billy Graham.
You know, I agree. I think it's a game. You know, I mean, and it's not, maybe this isn't the right year to say these kinds of things, but, you know, I think a progressive party can emerge one day. I just happen to be one of those kind of people, because I don't think that, you know, the Tea Party, you know, they have no idea. We know when we're being taken. We understand. We're paying attention. We still are because we're liberals. We have open minds and open hearts, and we want to do good. You know, so that's kind of why we say, well, hell, this is the only choice we have. Not them. See, for them, it's about team. It's like a team. It's like, you know, oh, well, my dad was a Yankee fan, so I'm a Yankee fan. My kid's a Yankee fan, and so on and so forth. And when the team wins, it's yay. It's, you know, it's rooting for that team. And that's how they don't care about anything else. They just want to win. That's why they got these people out down there with these houses falling apart, and they don't care, because they won. And that high that they get from winning is worth it. You know, they get that endorphin rush. You know, us with us, right, you know.
Well, that lady who was so pissed off in the Green News Report last night. It's 107 degrees in my house.
Yeah.
All right, you people get off your butts and come out here and fix it. Mm. Well, you know, lady, how's that voting for the little fetuses working out for you?
Yeah.
Are the little fetuses getting water out of your tap? Are the snowflake babies making the temperature drop there in your 107 degree oven of a house, honey?
Yeah. Where's all that White Mountain water? Huh? Where's all that at? White Mountain, whatever it's called, whoever, you know, they're all regional.
Yeah.
Dasani, where's your Dasani water? Because, you know, I mean, that's what happened with those guys, right? Now, see, even like, you know, you said that I was lucky, you know. So we get that. Speaking of Texas. Sorry, you brought up Texas, and you.
My bad.
It's so much. This is just so much information. You know, you got those extreme Mormon fundamentalists, right? That guy gets a life sentence, and you know some hideous things that guy was apparently convicted of. And they did it where? In Austin. And Austin is, right? It's the best kind of a liberal zone of Texas, isn't it?
A little bit of civilization in the heart of barbarian country.
Exactly. You know, so. You know, it's still there, boy. At least I hope they have their water. I remember, what is that? There's another documentary you got to watch about, you know, Austin's water supply and how it's getting destroyed. You know, because we don't plan, you know, anyway. But I think, honestly, for real, a progressive party, I think we can one day actually get one of those. I mean, it's never going to be a libertarian, right? Could it possibly be? Because in terms of, you know, these Tea Party people, you know, they would probably, you know, philosophically mostly agree with the libertarians for, well, maybe except some of the Jesus freaks, but other than that, you know, that's who their third party would be, and it's nothing. What happened to that Reform Party from Ross Perot? It never happens. Tea Party, right? Same thing. It's not a party. That's not a party. You guys are Republicans. That's what you are. You just rebrand. You're basically a K-car, and you just, you know.
Oh, my God, a K-car reference.
Yeah, there you go. I am for real. I mean, it's just, you know, whatever. I mean, you sit there, you think the Green Party's actually at least had votes. And see, the other thing is the Republicans are always willing to go over to the extreme fringe. I don't know. The Democrats are too. Sometimes they're just too afraid. And we actually have a socialist in. I mean, we have some guys out there, progressives out there, and oh my God, they put their six people on that super. I hate that super Congress. I know I'm rambling on it, but
No. What's to like? What's to like?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's there's old Harry Reid inspiring confidence again. Max Baucus, really?
Yeah, Max Baucus. That's the guy's name.
And John Kerry. You know, the teabaggers, the teabaggers side of that will sit and shoot wet spitballs through a straw at John Kerry during every meeting because they know he won't fight back.
I don't know. He seems to be getting a little cantankerous in his old age. He blames, you know, maybe it's the Botox going to his head, but he did blame the downgrade, the S&P downgrade on the Tea Party. You know, he's been so brave. Imagine if he was just had that, if he had that big of balls when he was running. Imagine, remember those days? My God.
Yeah.
God, we've come a long way, at least a little. Well, maybe not a lot. Anything is a long way from where we were.
Well, just standing, I mean, even if he just says, I don't like being shot with your spit balls. Even if he'll just do that, you know, I mean, that would be a step forward, right?
He got his batteries charged. That's all that is. Man, yeah, so, I don't know, bud. You know, we still got a lot of work here in Wisconsin. We got a lot of work everywhere. You know, and when we have, you know, as a plasma physics, guys with electrical engineering, master degrees, you know, and they're homeless on the street, it's just like, you know, it's like, this is why we have a safety net, you fool. And who knows? I don't know why that guy's on the street. I mean, I didn't even have time to read everything. I was too busy burying my cat. But I saw that and haven't gotten back to it yet. But, I mean, man, I don't know. Well, I don't know what happened to him. But, it, you know, whatever it happened to him, it doesn't matter. He's still got that brain in his head.
Right.
You know, he's still got that brain in his head. He still has use. This is somebody that's useful. You know, it's just unbelievable. I mean, I don't care what he's done.
I want that guy who's got training in electrical engineering and plasma physics. I badly want to have an America, Albert, where that guy's only use is not going in to the military-industrial complex and figuring out how to more efficiently and quickly kill more brown people.
Mm, he's such a communist.
You know, I don't want him working on Death Ray 3.2. I don't want him working on the passive denial weapon that will pop a bag of popcorn at 100 yards. I don't want that.
Yeah.
I want the guy working on the stuff that really matters. We got real problems that don't involve bombing brown people.
Indeed. I mean, that's the thing.
And yet it's beyond the ken of, you know, not just the entire Republican establishment and all the godforsaken teabaggers, Albert. It's beyond the ken of a whole bunch of what does Sandra call them? Cruise missile liberals. No, I want him making $250,000 a year making the next generation cruise missile in case we need to send one into a mud hut somewhere.
Mm. Well, that's why you see full page ads in Time magazine with an elegant looking black woman saying, I am one of the 2.3 million workers for the oil companies.
There. Oh, I hate those so much. And then, well, okay, so let me throw another one at you, just because this will make you, you know, run around screaming in the yard behind your hedge. What was the genesis of this? I saw this blog posting from one website that back referenced another blog post from a website called PowerShift 2011. WeArePowerShift.org, and it's a young woman by the name of Danielle Sims, who is the Summer Projects Fellow with the Energy Action Coalition. And she tells the story of her attendance at the National Young Democrats of America meeting. Okay, I'm just going to read directly from the blog for a minute, because if I just start talking about it or trying to extemporize what the story is, I'll start sputtering and swearing.
Good luck.
Danielle Sims writes on August the 5th, I couldn't sit down because there was coal on my chair. You read that right. There was a life-size foam lump of coal on my chair. What? Okay, let me back up a bit. Last weekend, I went to the 2011 Young Democrats of America National Convention in Louisville, Kentucky. On Friday, looking at the schedule of events, I was really excited to see a large variety of program sessions, from Good Politics is Good Policy to Getting Press Coverage and other issue caucus meetings. I was extremely excited to see a program session on Scaling Up America's Clean Energy Economy 101, because I helped coordinate 17 youth-led clean energy economy projects across the country. Okay. The Sierra Club Beyond Coal T-shirts for convention attendees were there to take. I'm proudly wearing one now. I was really impressed by Young Democrats of America's partnership with the Sierra Club. All right, sounds great so far, doesn't it? Except for the I couldn't sit down because there was a lump of coal on my chair part.
Mm-hmm.
On Saturday, the convention conducted business during plenary sessions that were mandatory for convention participants to attend. Our afternoon plenary was a... Get your running shoes on, Albert.
I can feel it.
It's not a good feeling, is it?
No.
Our afternoon plenary was a presentation and discussion, a conversation about coal. Looking at the schedule, I knew this wouldn't be exactly my favorite event of the day, but I thought it would be interesting to hear arguments supporting clean coal. As I walked into the convention plenary session room, the over 500 seats in the room had a lump of foam rubber coal placed on top of them, all branded with the Alpha Natural Resources logo. Now, these are the evil bastards who are trying to blow up Coal River Mountain, Albert.
Mm-hmm. That's Massey 2.0, right?
Massey 2.0, bingo. And so a representative from Kentucky's Alpha Natural Resources and a professor began their presentation. They described how clean coal is great for the environment because it captures carbon and reduces carbon dioxide emissions, and they made the claim that eliminating coal as an energy source would be a detriment to the families and communities of Kentucky and West Virginia that depend on coal extraction for jobs. Blah, 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 blah. So the upshot of it is the Young Democrats of America, not the Young Republicans, because I would expect that of them, the Young Democrats of America took money from Alpha Natural Resources in order to, so that Alpha Natural Resources could then propagandize about the wonders of coal to the generation of Democrats yet to come. And so, you know me, I actually read the comments, and I commented on the blog. And this one the exalted noble lumpkin of the Young Democrats starts fighting back about how we didn't sell out to coal, we didn't sell out to coal. Yes, you sold out to coal. You took coal's money. When you take coal's money, you help kill my friends. You help destroy my family. You help destroy the place my family has lived for 8, 9, 10 generations, depending on which part of my family you're asking. Sometimes it seems, you know, one step forward and two steps back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean... the only thing I guess we got going for us is, you know, maybe some of them can.
But I mean, when I read stuff that like that, I mean, you understand. I know you understand, and I know Ivan understands. When I read stuff like that, it becomes, I mean, I'm absolutely awash in a sense of profound urgency. You know, forgetting the horn off the grid and putting up, you know, big blinking solar-powered neon lights that say, we're not burning coal here, effers. You know, it's a shabby little worn-out house that has more things wrong with it than right. But by God, I would absolutely hold it out to the world as a showplace. And say, here we are in West Virginia. and we aren't participating in the filthy, godforsaken, stinking, rotten, dirty, hateful, poisonous, cancerous, murderous coal industry. Guess what? You can too.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that just be fun?
Oh, boy. And that's the thing. That's why we need guys with master degrees in physics.
Bingo!
Physics. That's why we need them working. This is why I'm out to tell you, every time you hear them sit there and try to talk about spending, you say, investment. You know, you be a multi-level marketer for common sense to these people. You know, use that dazzling multi-level marketing scare. Hey, you're building a business. You're investing in your company. No?
Not so hard to fathom, is it?
I mean, what do you think? What do you think building a carbon nanotube solid state battery is? What do you think that is?
Sounds like the future to me.
Carbon. Let's talk that kind of carbon. I don't want to talk about no hydrocarbons, and I don't want to talk about no coal carbons. I want to talk about nanocarbon. That's what I want to talk about. And I want to talk about batteries. And I want to talk about solar panels. That's what we need to talk about now, every day. Because that's the answer. There's all of that stuff. Everything. Geothermal, coal, solar panels. I mean, you were talking earlier on. You know that's right up my alley. You don't even have to lease them. They're getting to the point now in terms of price where it's almost cheaper than paying your electric bill is paying off the loan for your solar panels on your roof. It's almost to that point now. If you got, I don't have a huge roof, but I can cover my roof in solar panels and I'll have power. There's no doubt about it. You know, that's the thing. It's like, you know, we need grid 2.0. Well, in order to get the next grid, you know, the high-tech smart grid doesn't just mean wires, Bob. Smart grid means appliances.
Sure.
And everything.
And windows. Everything.
Yeah. That's what we need. You
but
know,
but,
I mean,
but, but the other side of that coin, Albert, is, and this story's a month old or so, it turns out there's a little bit of trouble here in River City. The Manchin administration, you know, Blanche Manchin, back when he was still governor.
Oh, great.
Got a boatload of money for doing weatherization, green energy upgrades on people's homes and businesses, right?
Yeah, I bet.
They spent $100,000 of it or so.
Ooh.
Having lawyers do document review. Anything to keep from actually doing the things that will make it necessary to burn less coal.
For real. $100,000.
If not more.
I have friends that have their bar degree that would take way less than that.
Oh, but they're not friends of coal.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, because $100,000, I mean, what are you looking for? I mean, I don't know, what are you looking for?
I mean, just hold on a minute. I mean, this is a low-rent, little broke-down, busted-knuckle state, but we do have something within our state government called an attorney general, and he's got lots of lawyers on salary.
Oh, they get a salary. Oh, so they don't even get the charge right. Oh, okay.
And so all of those $100,000 or whatever it was of documents that needed reviewing, those documents could have been reviewed by an associate deputy attorney general.
Oh.
And it wouldn't have cost anything. But then it wouldn't have taken money away from something that's going to make less coal be burned.
That's how they balance that budget and save the taxpayers money. And they, they probably did some sort of budgetary.
Yeah, I mean, no, I'm only 37 minutes from the tequila, so. But it drives me nuts.
It does.
And every one of these things is, I mean, the blessed irony of all of this, Albert, you know, we taught that Young Democrats meeting where they, I mean, stop. I mean, I was kind of surprised you didn't go, wait a minute, Bob. Really? Foam rubber lumps of coal? They are lumps of promotional coal made from petroleum hydrocarbons? I mean, we're just working the whole hydrocarbon cycle here, aren't we?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
not really.
No.
Yeah, I mean, sarcasm, I mean, they listen to Sean Hannity, they don't understand him. They don't understand sarcasm.
Let freedom ring!
They're only here to win. They don't care. They don't care. Wait, you guys aren't up to bat yet.
No, that's like me standing at the ATM going, I won!
Yeah, I won, yeah, exactly. That's these people. And so sarcasm is, you know, you know, I mean, you would even think that, I mean, Phil, just imagine, wait a minute, you don't want solar panels on every roof in the nation? You don't want a solar panel system on your roof providing you and your neighbors power? I mean, cover, you don't want that? You don't want that.
It may cause the sun to burn up my home. I mean, there was one of those Onion stories the other day that I just read the title of it and I wasn't okay for about 5 minutes. I was laughing so hard. Just laid me low. Oh, here it is. Scientists trace heat wave to massive star at center of solar system. Well, damn, Marveline, that explains everything now. We got there's a star in our solar system. No wonder it's getting so hot. Damn that Al Gore and his global warming.
We need a thicker atmosphere to shield us. Put some smoke up in the sky.
Oh, and David from Tennessee adding, of course, coal lumps. You do know that was a promotional item made in China, don't you, Bob?
No doubt. No doubt.
I know.
All right, brother.
All right. You've had a tough day, brother. Thanks for the time.
Oh, my pleasure. And, well, keep on keeping on, and we'll see you next time.
All right. Take care, Albert.
All right, brother Bob.
Oh, by the way, David in Tennessee says if you're really into the Nissans, you want to look for one of the new Muranos. That's Murano, not Morano, but that's the hot schmexy ride.
Yeah, no, he must own one, so I won't tell him who I know that owns one, because there's no way I could own one.
No, he doesn't own one.
Yeah.
Oh. But it is the ride on the Nissan mark right now.
Maybe I should tell you. No, I won't. We'll save that for another day.
No, well, okay. See ya, Albert.
All right, brother. I'll be good, brother.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Oh, man. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, this is Heath in Astoria again.
Oh, great. How's it going, Heath?
How you been doing?
Doing good.
Well, I'm just having a pretty good week, I guess. We're in the middle of a state inspection and federal inspection of the nursing homes. If you remember, I was telling you I worked at a place called Rivington House.
Which yes.
Is a long-term care facility for AIDS patients. And luckily, I'm off for the next 2 days, so... That's good.
Hey, a little break.
Yeah, well, a little break during a state inspection, which is quite wonderful because those are the one time it's no fun. You know, so we're going through that, and so I've been just kind of hanging out at home with my son and sort of following what's going on in London and England, which is a trip. But doesn't surprise me because the center of all this again seems to be police stop and frisks, which in New York City we know all about. You know, we went through Diallo some, you know, 12 years ago. I don't know if you remember the Diallo case where
all too sadly and all too well. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, and that's really never changed in this city. This city still has in a lot of neighborhoods young kids. Especially young kids, you know, who are African American, who are Latino, young kids of color, you know, brown people, being stopped and frisked all the time. And if you just check out like a lot of the literature in New York City, it's just continued. And you know, it goes on. I think, you know, there seems to almost be like this Palestinianization of, I think, almost working people and stuff these days, but especially of people who are of a different color. So, you know, I certainly kind of understand probably some of the rage of some of these people reacting in England, though of course, the violence has gotten a little or very much out of hand. But
yeah, I read a story. You know, Sandra sent me a story earlier today, Heath, that said that the violence in Birmingham had risen to the level. Alabama's Birmingham. England, it's Birmingham. The violence in Birmingham.
Okay, well.
The violence in Birmingham had gotten to the point where three young men of Asian or Middle Eastern descent were run over in the street by some disaffected rioters. That's not a good sign.
Well, I think what you're having like there is almost like a collapse of almost everything. You know, it just happens once in a while.
Well,
if you look at, it doesn't surprise me when you look at all the other things that have happened or are in line to happen in England with austerity measures and.
Well, and that's where it gets problematic, because the only thing that has calmed this at all is a massive, massive police presence. But everybody there knows that the massive police presence itself is unsustainable because of the austerity measures and because of the breakdown in the budgetary process and because all of the money has been sent north to the money people. So it's more likely to happen sooner at this point than it was before.
Yeah, no, it's what's definitely going on there is just really sad. Though it's interesting, I don't know if you listen to, I think there's this guy named Fuchs. He seems to be an older, British journalist, who seems West Indian or of some, brown, descent.
Afro-Caribbean
right
kind of, yeah.
Yeah, African-Caribbean. And, he's talking about the fact, he says his grandson, who never committed a crime or anything, you know, the moment he hit 16 is being frisked every day, you know, or a lot more often, you know, by the British police, you know, doing a lot of the same things which they do in New York, which they do in a lot of places, which is under always the auspices of guns, but then kids are busted for things like small amounts of marijuana, very petty crimes, reacting to being frisked. So it just sets up this adversarial, almost, how can I put it, relationship between the police and the community. So when things do go wrong, especially at a time when, you know, I mean, because I'm sure, you know, the Afro-Caribbean community in London is not much different than the African-American community in America, in the sense that unemployment, I'm sure, is skyrocketing. People don't have jobs. And you have kids who really...
And services are becoming all but non-existent.
Well, especially because, you know, what pays for the services that keep kids off the street, you know? Especially in poor communities, it's government. And or charitable things like churches, community groups. For the churches and community groups, you know, the moment you're in austerity, they don't get anything.
Well, let me ask you a question then, because you are more uniquely positioned to answer this than am I. I live in a very rural place. I mean, there's not enough people around me that if they got good and angry that we'd have enough to turn over a Volkswagen Beetle. But you're in New York City.
Okay.
Is it? And I've been arguing for the last couple of nights that, you know, the American people, no, we're not going to do it. We wouldn't do it. We won't get off our duffs to go and do it. Could it become ugly enough in America's major urban centers for the sort of thing that happened in London to happen?
Sure, it has in the past. It's happened, or it's almost happened many times in the past over similar situations. The 93 riots in Los Angeles, was it 93 or 92? That certainly was a conflagration very similar to what you're seeing in England right now. Where I think people just had enough and just lost control. And one of the things that's happening And, you know, in 98, I think, in New York City, if it hadn't been for basically Al Sharpton, who really became of age as a leader and as a political force through the Diallo, tragedy, he basically was able to, after the verdict, calm down, you know, a very angry section of people in the city, including myself at the time. At the time, I was furious, you know, that, you know, someone was shot 41 times just sitting, you know, sitting on their stoop, you know. That's what this guy was doing. He was entering his building, you know. There were people who were very angry. I think you could have a conflagration somewhat like this. I think if you get the right or the wrong, I don't know how you want to put this, but if you get that perfect storm of events, certainly. I think if unemployment continues to rise in certain places, if there are then a series of events where a group of especially young people who do not have anything better to do at this point, young people, see, the scary thing also is I think you're seeing the difference between, let's say, the L.A. riots and, let's say, what happened in London is also the effect of social media and stuff. That wasn't there in 1993. Could you have imagined the L.A. riots if people like Little Monster and some of the people who were interviewed afterwards, who were members of things like the Crips and Bloods, who had literally formed truces and such, had social networking and could have directed their mobs and stuff? I mean, you would have had something even far more difficult to control. You know, that's what's happening there too. I mean, you know, just like, you know, social networking had a lot to do with what happened and is happening in places of the Middle East, it certainly works the same way in the West, you know. It's changed, I think, the whole dynamic of basically, demonstrating and of, you know, activism on the streets, especially in terms of periods of what you might want to term in some senses insurrection. It's a tool that makes hooliganism much more easy, and that's scary. We've seen that since soccer riots years ago and such. Soccer riots got even crazier the moment people had cell phones and could communicate, and flash mobs and stuff. I think it's the same thing now with, what you're seeing in Britain right now. You know, a lot of these kids do have Blackberries. You know, a lot of these kids do have a G phone. And I'm 53. I think you're somewhere in your mid 40s. And I can tell you, my 10-year-old is far better on the G phone my wife just bought me, you know, like a week and a half ago, which is I used to call you and such, than I am. You know, and that's my 10-year-old. So
yeah,
imagine a 19 or 20-year-old who's been doing this for several years now. You know, and I really believe that the police in London and a lot of the people in the government and the establishment, you know, they're out of their class trying to compete with a lot of these kids, you know, in terms of, you know, I mean, I'm very surprised. I'm almost waiting to hear something like threats to turn off the web or something or the net, you know, which you might end up hearing sooner or later in one of these.
Well, and that's the thing, Heath. I think it's a double-edged sword. Because the one thing that I think keeps Americans, you know, in their Barca loungers is the fact that we are sold and completely committed to total information overload. As silly as it may seem, that's one of the reasons that I've not been crazy about going to video with this show, because I want it to remain a sort of a warm medium where people can move around and think about stuff and write stuff without having to stare at a screen. But staring at that screen has profound implications on what happens to your time while you're doing it.
Oh, certainly. You know, I think, but, you know, it's like it or not, you know, things have changed in terms of information and moving information around. I don't think that changed for the better in many ways. You know, I think in many ways somewhat of a Luddite myself, I think they've changed for the worse. But they've changed, you know. All of a sudden, you know, you have, you know, when you think about it, you have the ability to do things that most years ago nobody could do.
Yes.
You know, right now you can make yourself a video and broadcast it around the world. You know, I don't know quite how to do that yet. I think I'm going to learn that in the next year or so. But, you know.
Well, we've all got these learning curves. Mine is to learn to edit video, and I need to do that sooner rather than later.
Oh, mine is even just to become comfortable, like right now with the G-phone. I mean, I'm just starting to play with it. But, you know, that's okay, you know. But I think one of the things that at least you will see, you know, you saw it in the Middle East, you're seeing it in London now. I know I saw it in 2004 was fascinating in New York City during the Republican convention. Because, you know, if you watch the mainstream media, you didn't know it. But if you were checking things out like New York One and then things like Democracy Now or just going on the alternative media sites and stuff, you know, there was a little insurrection going on and a police state by Bloomberg. I mean, it was fascinating, you know, just tracking this and watching that in my own city, like in 2004, where, you know, there was a two-day period, like after the big demonstration, there was a 3 or 4 day period where people were going out on the streets to demonstrate and being arrested and brought down to this place we started calling, you know, Guantanamo on the Hudson because it was, Gitmo on the Hudson because it was like, this abandoned bus depot. I mean, I don't know if people remember that from that period. But, you know, so...
Were totally out of control.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying, you know. And what did you hear today? I don't know if anybody was... I was watching Morning Joe today. Did you hear from Joe Scarborough and, you know, some of the others? Well, you know, if he had just gotten Timoney there or, you know, one of those, you know, tough, you know, American take-no-nonsense cops in London, he'd never have any of these problems, you know. And you certainly do need police. I mean, we've seen.
Yeah, but you know, you've offered a very measured response to all of this, and that's largely what we've heard over the past 3 days here on the Horn. Let me share something with you real quick.
Okay.
I'm not going to say where this comes from, but it comes from a site where I see a lot more so-called conservative stuff than I do anything that was on along the lines of how I think and feel. Describing this is someone from, you know, New York City, describing his impressions of what's going on in England. This kind of stuff is just totally pathetic, reminiscent of what happened in Vancouver. And all this over what? A gun-wielding maniac gets shot by police before he can harm anyone. Give me a break. Stuff like this happens stateside as well. I clearly remember the whole Rodney King riots in L.A. as a kid. The looters and vandals will use anything as an excuse. And see, when you get that kind of mindset, you are guaranteed to see the whole cycle play out again and again and again and again because it's just too easy to, well, you know, they're just that kind of people. It's like that asshat from Nebraska last night at the top of the program who said that people on welfare are coons.
Mm-hmm.
Once you've done that, you have committed... realistically and analytically, once you've gone to a place like that, you have committed to not solving the problem.
Well, but, you know, I think what has to be explained to people like that, and it's hard to explain it to them, but, you know, if you keep going, sometimes it gets through to them as, one, this was not a gun-wielding maniac, from what at least I've learned.
No.
You know, now we don't know exactly who this man was, but this was a man with 4 children. He was probably someone, he might have been stealing a little weed or something. He may even have had a weapon on him, we don't know. But the whole point is, you know, time and time, you know, but from the impression we're getting more and more, you know, this guy was basically aggressively sought upon by the police and shot by the police.
Yes.
Okay? And, you know, that stop and frisk where every, like, kid from 17 to 30, you know, every man from 17 to 35 is thrown up against the wall in certain communities and frisked, you know, once or twice a week, you know, depending on, like, what time they find you, where they find you and stuff, is probably very much a reality in certain places in London. Because I know it's very much a reality in certain places in the Bronx and New York.
Well, and we have the nationwide phenomenon, whether it be rural Texas, South Florida, New York, L.A., Chicago, the whole phenomenon of DWB, you know, driving while black.
I'll be honest with you. I mean, you know, I'm a New Yorker. I've spent most of my life in New York, but I do travel from time to time. And a lot of times I have very interesting experiences because sometimes running an arts organization on and off during my life, you know, as I had told you, I teach art to kids, you know. And in the early 90s, I ran an arts organization called Spiral Arts. And one of the things we did was we were accepted in a really nice alternative gallery in Cleveland called Spaces for the first show in Ohio about AIDS. And this was in, I think, maybe 93, 94. And I remember I went to Ohio with $35 in my pocket, the art under my arm on a Greyhound bus. I put the art up in the gallery. I was met by a really good friend of my wife's who had shown some art in New York and was going to put me up for a day or two. She brought me out to her daughter's apartment in Rocky River, Ohio. You know, they showed me a very nice time. Rocky River seems to be this, like, very nice upper middle class suburb of Cleveland. Now, to describe myself, especially at the time, I had shoulder length hair. I'm somewhat olive skinned because I'm Italian, half Italian and half Swedish. I had a fairly long beard. You know, I was wearing a pair of sweats. You know, I got up that morning. They gave me a little breakfast. I said, I want to go down and buy a pack of cigarettes. They said, we'll drive you. I said, let me walk. It seems about a block and a half away. I walked a block and a half. I buy my cigarettes. I'm coming out. I see a bus stop, and I just sit down at the bus stop to light a smoke because it's a nice day. I'm sitting there smoking. All of a sudden, two cop cars pull up. Sir, you match the description of someone who's wanted for armed robbery. You know, so, you know, I show them my ID. I'm very cool. Yes, officers, you know, I'm sure it's not me. You know, I show them my gallery contract. I show them my Greyhound bus tickets. They're like, okay. You know, but I was stopped.
But you know, and that's
because
still...
I'm slightly different looking somewhere in the middle of, you know, a, like, say, upper middle class suburb of Cleveland, Ohio. Believe me, if I was, you know, even more different looking, or had reacted in a different way, I could have ended up in jail. You know, it's, you know, people do react to what people look like and stuff, and that's a very sad thing.
Well, sure, but still, the element of having to prove that your papers are in order in America is repugnant in its own right. That you felt, you know, that
and that was before 9/11.
Sure, right.
After 9/11. You know, in New York City, most people don't walk out of their house without some form of ID. Because half of us remember, you know, after 9/11, if you lived below 14th Street and you walked out that day without a photo ID with an address on it, you might have not gotten home for about a week and a half. You know, so, yeah, I mean, we do live in this, like, you know, quasi-police state. And, you know, there are, you know, people in state who, because of what they look like, they're a larger Brunton police. You know, very much in London and in England. Because I'm even more police today. They may have the body, and but they're laid off a lot of these and put theirs up all over England. England is like, you know, they have some work of cameras in, which is, I don't know if you've ever checked this, that's phenomenal.
I'm sorry, Heath, but you're breaking up a little bit. I think you referenced the cameras. You know, the idea that a two and a half pound ski mask can defeat millions of pounds of technology is, I think, still an ironic comment on the foolhardiness of relying on that kind of technology. I do have to roll. I'm glad you called back, and I hope you will again.
Okay. Take care.
You take care, too. Good to hear from you. Bye now.
Have a good week. Bye.
Bye. I hope the breakups don't continue. Hey, welcome to the program.
Guess I get your first caller to be your last call?
Well, I guess you do, Tracy, assuming that the line holds up. For some reason or other, no, we're having telephone breakup time here, and it's, I gotta say, it's chapping my butt.
It's 18.
No, it's not. No, this one's my fault, Tracy. This, for some reason or another,
okay,
we lose a certain degree of our internet connectivity from time to time that makes the phone calls sound like poop.
Like that?
Well, every third half a syllable comes through.
Well, good news is, I'm glad I got to say oh, and close up with you. But I don't even know if that just happened when we were talking. I was going up, and but any oh no, the news is that customer was in the car. He was already pissed off. Well, not me, but he one day trip. She left her bank airport and didn't look at her itinerary. They flew her from her, and she thought she was back in Burbank, but they flew her into L.A. So I had to drive her from X to Burbank. The part about us that I gave her information, she gave me information. We had the amazing thing, and if Paul had the cut, would have heard some real half African-American and Indian. So she went from her, she's from two press people. And the conversation was just amazing. But the bottom line was, we were just talking about these people. She had never heard of mountaintop removal, so she's going to go look that up.
Oh, I hope she does. And by the way, the breakup cleared too, Tracy. So we lost.
You can hear me?
We lost some of that story, but you have got, yeah, the call has gotten well.
Good. But the thing was, we were just talking about these rich, greedy bastards, and how much money is enough money?
And that's the one question you will never get them to answer with any degree of honesty whatsoever.
And that's my question, because see, at what cost is this money gonna? I heard some of the beginning of your show, talking about was the 2 Corinthians, the 13th chapter.
Yeah, 1 Corinthians chapter 13, right.
1 Corinthians chapter 13. And another one of my favorites, because without love, you're nothing. But here's another one, that you can marinate on. What does it profit a man to gain the whole world
and lose his own soul?
A soul is more precious than silver or gold.
There.
Because the thing is, these people think they could do all this dirt and get away with it. They obviously don't know about generational curses, do they?
I guess not, because they think they can buy their way around it.
But they can't. And it may not happen to them, but, along down the line, great-grandchild or grandchild, and they're wondering, why is all this stuff happening to me? Why is my life so horrible or what have you? Why am I not happy? Just think about what great-great-grandpappy did back in the day, and the dirt and the filth and the evilness that was a part of your family. And hopefully, maybe things will change. Maybe somebody in that family with all this money and all these resources will do good things instead of doing evil. It can happen, can it?
Oh, sure it can. There are foundations out there. For instance, just as an example, the Rockefellers got filthy, stinking, ugly, multi-generationally rich, raping America and exploiting America. And now the Rockefeller Family Foundation... and largely via the Standard Oil Trust, right?
Right.
Well, now the Rockefeller Foundation is actively involved in trying to promote awareness of and response to the global climate crisis. So, yeah, that kind of thing does happen. John Kerry's wife, Teresa, married into the Heinz family. And that man was a filthy, evil, disgusting right-wing Republican. And he died, she got the money, and now the Heinz money goes into progressive causes.
Ha ha!
It's just like Gretchen Peters, the songwriter of "Let Freedom Ring" that Hannity uses, that the Ed Kurt was talking about, and that Michael then told us more about. Michael letting us know the story of the fact that she takes all the royalties that comes from Sean Hannity's use of that song and turns it around to progressive organizations. So in essence, Sean Hannity is being made to pay. Move on.
You know what? We came to me and my customer gate came to the conclusion that these people cannot be happy people. And that there is something, there is such a deep cavernous hole in their, and if they had a soul, but something, because see, when people are horribly unhappy, they try to fill the gap, they try to fill the hole, the void with something, be it food, be it drugs, be it sex, and in a lot of these people, be it money and or all of the above, because there is something missing, this, the fundamental thing that to make us human beings, that people, that you should care about one another, that you should take care of one another. And this, that part, that gene is somehow missing. And that's what keeps, you know, because see, people like you and me, we're relatively happy because we care about people and we care about this earth and we care about just people in general. And we don't want to see people suffering.
Yeah, because you and I have a different perspective. If the water bill's paid and the light bill's paid and we got enough to eat, then, yeah, it'd be nice to have stuff. But
yeah,
we've got enough of a sense of perspective, and this applies across the Horn family spectrum.
Dry Jesus! I'm sorry.
That's all right. Work-related. But it gives us a sense of perspective for what really matters.
Right.
You know, when I don't have to sweat at the end of the month to make sure that we're going to have another month of broadcasting, when the bills are paid, then, you know, I feel like, life's a lark at that point.
I'm doing a jig, and that's the wrong word to use, but.
But, no, I get it. I'm sorry
I know you got to go.
Sorry you only got back at the end of the program, but we'll get it squared up one way or another.
Okay, well. We will, and like I said, always have a great day. God bless, and keep it moving.
All right, thanks. Watch out for the other guy. Those people are crazy.
Yes, they are.
Bye, Tracy. Tracy calling from the wild roads of L.A. A closing note from David in Tennessee. It's rather simple. A government elected by a short-sighted, right-wing participatory electorate doesn't like the lifestyle of those on the dole. They don't cut their hair or some such, so they cut the dole. You don't want to cut your hair? We'll cut your dole. They do nothing to replace the dole, save for advertisements and bumper stickers encouraging reaching for those mythic bootstraps. Well, folks, says David, ain't no bootstraps to reach for. So, disaffected, deprived of future, and watching their older relatives do badly on reduced health care, they take it to the streets. Now, where the hell is the mystery as to the cause? Asks David. Ain't no mystery to me. I suspect it's no mystery to you. Thanks again to the very kind contributor who sent a memorial contribution remembering Judy Bonds that took care of this evening's fundraising. Thank you very kindly. As noted, she was a perfect exemplar of women standing. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Welcome, new chat room moderator, Sparky. Thanks to everybody who participates in the chat room. You make this all a lot more fun. So, and thanks to our chief mod, Lottie. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Reverbo. Thanks to John Fox. And many thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. He needs your help. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go, learn, join. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all.